The show is live on tape, which I know sounds like an oxymoron, but in show business terms, I guess that means that once the tape starts, it just goes until you're done. You're not going to stop for anything, redo it.
No editing.
No editing. It's just going to be live on tape.
Our team of editors will be so upset.
Oh, there it is, top of the hour.
Whatever hour it is.
It's 3 o'clock.
Okay.
Spartans! What is your profession?
And I'll start with this text out of the box. It's 10:01 a.m. I don't have a clue what your topics are today. Way to relate to your listeners. That's Mr. I Can't Relate, who checks in
right out of the box
multiple times every day. And as I said yesterday when I mentioned I'm going to tape the show, you can text and call because half the time it doesn't matter anyway what the topic is. Yeah. You take it wherever you want to go.
Alcoholic Craig called
in. Think he cares
he
what
had
the topic,
no topic.
Is?
No. He didn't even know.
Joke?
He's just standing in a lake somewhere.
Gives a crap. She wants to talk about immigration every time she calls. I never talk about immigration.
And stand-up comedians.
And stand-up comedians.
She doesn't like stand-up comedians.
At all. So Leslie's going to do her thing. There's no Jim Ramsey at the outset here because he's got other stuff at Channel 9. He said he might jump on later in the show. So that's a crapshoot. But we'll just move along. Later in the program, this is going to be on. Marja Mills, she has written a book, The Mockingbird Next Door, where she moved in next door to the woman who wrote To Kill a Mockingbird, and her sister lives there too.
Harper Lee.
Harper Lee's sister lived together. And she wrote this book based on living there for a couple of years in Alabama. And she got some blowback because Harper released a statement afterwards when the book came out this summer that she said, I didn't cooperate with this woman. And then Harper's sister said she did, and it's back and forth that way. Anyway, it can't hurt book sales, and I don't think it did. I think it came out of the chute pretty strong.
Well, everybody loves To Kill a Mockingbird, and Harper Lee.
I don't like killing anything. I don't want to kill a bug anymore. I just feel as I get older, we're all on this ball for a short amount of time. Let's just kind of help each other out. Now, I'm not going to say I'm leaving the spider in the house. I will just usher it out the door.
But the goal is not to kill a mockingbird.
The goal is not to kill a mockingbird. But that book, you are right. It still sells, I think, 750,000 every year. But it was the only thing she wrote, which I find fascinating.
Yeah.
If you can write something that is a classic piece of literature, but that's all you have in you, all right, I'll talk to Marja about that later in the program.
She's been a big recluse, and that's why. She has never
talked
to anybody
about any of this. Yeah, that's the way it goes, which is fine. She wrote the book, but there might be some controversy as to did she, in fact, write the book, which I'll get into with Miss Mills. So this crash near O'Hare. So it was a
shuttle.
A shuttle for a rent-a-car company.
That's what it appeared.
Oh, good, because you know there's you now because they've closed the whole people mover from the economy.
The peeper mover peeper. Better be closed too,
Mr. Peeper.
Because I do a lot of V-boy with the window shades open.
But I thought that's what it was because I saw people walking with their bags down that Bessie Coleman today.
Right.
Because you can't park. You park. You know the economy.
Right.
They have that people mover that's closed.
They
now
shut down the people mover
till October.
Right.
And you take a shuttle bus. So there's a lot of people on that.
And with that, the shuttle buses weren't able to get through because they shut down I-190 for a while. But now everything's cool.
Nobody really hurt? Or
Four were critically injured.
Well, critical will do it.
Well, because you figure those people aren't wearing seatbelts. Some people are standing, and then you've got all that loose luggage inside that vehicle.
Because I take those, and we just throw it on that rack,
right?
And
mm-hmm.
There's some heavy luggage. And if you do any kind of juke move, there it goes.
Yeah.
And the front of this bus looked really bad. I mean, he smacked probably a foot square concrete post.
What did you call that? A bumble?
A bollard?
A bollard.
That is the technical term.
I never heard that.
A bollard? A bumblebee? What did you call it?
I just heard that with some B word.
It's a bollard.
A bollard.
Right.
It's not a
It's one of those posts that stands up that is supposed to stop you from going where you're not supposed to go. In this case, it did. Unfortunately, it took out the front of the bus in the process.
So you get off the plane, you're going to get your rent-a-car, or you're going, where
trying
was it going
to? An,
to?
Trying to get for the getaway, no less.
So you're going to the airport to get on your plane.
Because the people were literally walking down that little road, where that curvy road. That's not safe.
And what then, was it? It was only a couple months ago when it flooded out.
Yeah,
and we
people
saw the
walking down the expressway. That's not right.
But now you know you're totally going to miss your flight. That's a good 20-minute walk.
Well, probably. If you're in critical condition, yeah.
Well,
that's total missing the flight.
And
you're on
a
gurney, you're definitely going to move.
Through the entire thing, the blue line was still running. So if people had actually thought about it, all you had to do was drop somebody off at Cumberland.
Oh.
And they could have taken the train right into the terminals. But
now, again, you've got to put all that together when all this nonsense is going on.
And some tourists may not, for people from out of town, might not even know that the blue line exists.
I've never taken the blue line. I wouldn't think about that initially either.
I did that one time, and I felt so vulnerable.
From what?
From potential young toughs.
Okay.
Because they know that I'm traveling. I've got my bag.
Jesus.
I know I've got my money.
All your traveler's
checks. I've got all my traveler's checks.
Right.
I've got my my money belt.
Yeah.
And so I'm a target.
And your Elton John watch, but his big hand is on the yellow brick road, and the little hand is on the brown dirt cowboy.
Right. Well, because they've already seen him change his sunglasses four times,
right.
So they know he's packing a lot of stuff
in there. As I go through different neighborhoods.
But the nice thing about the blue line, it'll take you right to your terminal. It'll go right up the escalator. Isn't that the blue line?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Now, that's service.
That is.
Well, that's why we're the number one airport now.
That's the Blue Line extension. I think they shut that down.
You don't
now.
See Atlanta's Hartsfield having that.
Now, if you think back to the Blue Line going up the escalator, if you could put Yakety Sax underneath that, and those two guys standing there at the top of the escalator, what the?
Wow!
Elbows and asses, as they say.
And what was her excuse? She was sleeping?
She dozed off.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever happened to her?
She was working extra shifts. She's not working for the CTA anymore.
But that was $100 million repair or something like that? It was a very expensive repair.
Oh, my. Just destroyed the whole.
In Chicago, even if it's $500,000, not $100
million.
The same way we estimate crowds.
Yeah.
$500 becomes $5,000.
Well, weren't there a million at
easily
at the JRW thing?
Oh.
But they said there were a million?
No, they didn't. But wherever there's more than 40,
it went from hundreds to thousands of people showing up.
If it's a million people, that's more than a third of the entire city population in one four-block area, which you find hard to believe you could fit that many people in that area, but they seem to think you can.
Did you want to do your opening?
Yeah, I got to do some commercials, too, but here's another text. Mr. Stunat, I can't wait for 3. Enjoy your weekend.
Aww.
Well, 3 is here when you're hearing this. It's after 3.
It's 10 after 3 now, I hope.
It is.
Well, somebody didn't push the button, then you're not. And even saying this doesn't matter. You're not hearing anything.
Well,
I'll still
the button.
Be here in the future, and I'll make sure that somebody presses the button.
Thank you. All right, we'll take a little important. What does Milt say?
Obligations.
Obligations break, and then I'll play the opening, and we'll kick into something here.
I don't believe you're seriously considering listening.
It's Friday, you bastard.
From the WGN Tower.
Remember, you're all a big part of the show. We're on in 10 seconds, so get ready to have a good time. All right, here we go. This is exciting, isn't it?
He's down on the phone.
In 5, 4, 3, 2...
Now let us imagine that you're in the middle of your program.
You must identify your station.
You might say
WGN.
Dot FM.
Right here. Here.
Good afternoon, The Hague and Bedford Park.
Here.
Breaking news. Those wacky Japanese are doing it again. Yesterday, the woman who created Hello Kitty said it's not a kitty. Guys are marrying 6-foot-tall pillows.
That makes sense.
And now this, Shukatsu Fest Up, in which people prepare for their death by choosing their funeral outfit, have funeral makeup put on, and slip into a coffin they like and have a picture taken.
I don't know what that means. I didn't understand any of that.
So they know what they're going to look like on the day of their funeral.
Uh-huh.
What's it going to take to put you in this coffin? A heart attack? Hey, you never get over that new coffin smell, do you?
Well, let's move on. Let's groove on.
Developing story. A Florida mother hung up on a cop who was inquiring about her missing child because she had to get on stage at a strip club.
The bitch must die.
Shake what your mama gave you.
Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle.
Hey, your daughter's missing. I don't care. Wiggle, wiggle. I have to go spread eagle for some conventioneers who are dying to stuff my thong with dirty singles. There should be more paperwork to being a parent. I'm Gary Meyer. Those stories and more on 240 Minutes. Hello to Craig, the alcoholic. Listening in central Illinois on his porch.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
This is the Super G Gear Force on WGN.FM, Chicago.
Oh, sometimes I get a good feeling, yeah.
Yeah, that story about the woman whose daughter was left at a barbecue place. She's 10 years old. The grandmother called police when she didn't show up at home, so the police tried to get a hold of the mother, which they did. She's a stripper. And she hangs up on them because she's got to go on stage in about 90 seconds. And you're thinking...
Hey, look, I got to grease my pole. I don't have time for this.
Well, if that pole hadn't greased that made the baby, this wouldn't all be happening. That's the problem.
I got to get my glitter on.
Yeah.
In my... Oh,
there are so many of those stories out there that you just cry if you let it happen, where you absorb the nonsense.
As Chris Rock would say, your only job as a parent is to keep the boy off the crack pipe and keep your daughters off the pole.
Them off the pole. I am getting texts in, even though this is, and I won't belabor the point, but I want to let people know that the show is being taped earlier in the day and replayed at its normal time from 3 to 7.
So these are now five-hour-old texts.
They're 5 hours old, but they're actually trying to play into whatever the hell we might be talking about. And half the time, like I've said before, it doesn't matter. Jump in.
Right.
A lot of your stuff is good and funny, and I'll use it anyway, even if I'm not on some topic, which I rarely am. There was a story, and I had done this story when it first happened, and this text concerns the fact that it was followed up on where the woman, I guess, was sentenced. And it's a name theory story. A Utah woman accused of using a pound of bacon to start a fire in her boyfriend's house, her ex-boyfriend, well, I'm sorry to hear that, will stand trial. That's what's happening on arson charges. Police say 32-year-old Cameo Crispy repeatedly called and texted her former flame in March from his home where she left the bacon over a lit burner. Yeah, there's the name theory. A name that indicates what will eventually happen to you or what you'll end up doing. Here she is, Cameo Crispy, setting a fire at her ex-boyfriend's.
With crispy bacon.
No longer wanting to make bacon with her boyfriend, obviously.
The whole thing is over. Here's one. Living in Germany, I always listen to yesterday's show. How about a good evening to Nuremberg and Naperville? Which I've already written down for Tuesday. Coming back right after Labor Day. You're going to get that on Tuesday. BTW, I've had a chip and PIN cards for 8 years. Discussed this yesterday. They're finally going to put these chips and credit cards make it almost impossible to hijack your identity. And they've had these, as this guy said, at least 8 years, 10 years, I heard, in Europe. Why do we lag behind in this? And then somebody called and said because he had worked for a credit card company, it was too expensive to do it. I'm thinking, you hear about the billions of dollars they lose in theft.
Yeah.
That's cheaper?
And the 22% they're charging anyway?
Right.
Of the interest? You can't throw a little of that our way?
To save, which has got to be a major hassle all the time.
Well, and even in Europe, you're starting to see them a little more here now, but in Europe it's been used for many years, is with a credit card when you go to a restaurant. And they bring the little machine to your table. And you,
so you
swipe your own card,
well,
as opposed to giving your card and they walk off. And who knows what they do with it. You swipe it, the machine is there, you do it.
Well, they
and
have
it,
had...
The card
well, obviously
never leaves.
They've done that because they have had problems where the person takes your card and then 10 minutes later they're back. But who knows what they're doing
right
in the corner.
Oh, and it takes all of a half a second. If you've got one of those skimmers, it's an extra swipe. That's it. And well, you've got all the information you
need.
That
was an episode of The Sopranos where they, in one of the bars, they were doing that scam with the American Express cards or something.
They in the meantime, the other one is the biometrics that they were trying to ingratiate into public use, but nobody wants to share like their fingerprints and eye prints with, you know, just a credit card company. It does seem
although
a little intrusive,
that would be
but
perfect.
That would knock it out too. Yeah,
well, especially the eye thing. I mean, why not?
The eye print is as unique as your fingerprint.
But if you're afraid about giving your fingerprint away because that does live perhaps in other areas, but who takes your eye print? When you get arrested, you don't take your eye print. You know, if you go...
And we know, though, but in the future, because I saw Minority Report, that eventually they'll just pluck out people's eyes and you can use somebody's
like
eyeball
somebody
in
said
your pocket.
They cut off your finger for that.
And there was another movie that they cut the eye out, and used the eye. Yeah, I've seen a few of those.
All right, well, we're going to get these chips, and I think they have to have them all in by the end of next year.
So will I get a new card then?
Yeah.
So everybody just gets new cards.
Oh. You get a new card. You get a new card.
Woo-hoo!
By the way, I was wondering how those guys weighed their scrotums. Did they use a fishing scale? I had that story a couple days ago. Another guy had that giant scrotum, and he wasn't aware of how to get rid of it until he saw that TLC piece on the first guy who had it, that Warren guy. And then he is now trying to raise some money because it's very expensive to remove that thing.
And raise his groin.
And everything. I don't know how, again, 100 pounds, it was, 100 pounds. The Warren guy was 100 and some
30,
pounds.
I want to say 32.
132 pounds. And we made this comment, and you will agree, I think, when it gets past two pounds.
2 pounds.
Yeah.
Two pounds is way too much.
I'm kind of curious now to weigh... the groinal area, just to see. It's got to be light.
It's got to be an ounce.
Well, I mean, the most.
Why do I imagine you in the produce department of some little grocer?
Is that going to even register on a bathroom scale?
And if you do, at least use the bag that they supply in the grocery store.
I will do that.
The plastic bag.
But maybe after I do V-Boy, I'll just make that the second act on the afternoon.
You know, when I worked at Jewel when I was a checker.
Easy.
If you used the bag, like if you had your produce in a bag. Now, this is back when I used to actually hit buttons before the scanner.
Mm-hmm.
We would take off a penny.
For the weight of the bag?
For the weight of the bag.
Okay.
If somebody brought just a, like say they brought bananas plain with no bag, okay, boom, 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 you hit the...
Right, but if they had a bag...
But if they put that in a bag, you hit dun, 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 and then you hit something that 01.
And on the receipt it said, you saved 1 cent by using a bag.
Yeah, so don't forget, if you do go to the grocery store and you put them in a bag, take off a little weight, because the bag is weight.
That's already been calculated in the self-checkouts.
Oh, they do
when you
now?
Put your produce on there, it asks you, is it in a plastic container, a bag, no container, or whatever?
Because they will take, that's not the true weight then, you know. But just so make sure.
A penny's worth of plastic, though, seems.
Do you pay attention when you're scanning the items, if you're checking out yourself or the cashier? Are you paying attention to see if, in fact, what comes up on the screen? Or do you look at your receipt afterwards? I do.
I
always
do it
add everything
depends.
Up.
Oh, do you
I do it. I round off. And then if the sum is not close, I know I'm going to be a dollar or two off because I'm just rounding off each item number.
I think you don't, as you put your stuff in, don't you sort of have an idea this should probably cost about $35?
Sure.
40, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I do before
but
I get there.
I just want to double check. You never know.
Well, now, last week I went and my wife wanted some cherries. So this was a little deceptive. It said $4.49, right? I thought
a pound.
That was, I thought it was for the bag. I didn't see a pound because it's in those
fruit
nice...
is really expensive right now.
Insanely expensive.
Yeah.
I got a bag of apples.
Oh.
$8.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was going for. I got Mariano's, two slices of cheese pizza. Those are $3 a piece, a bag of apples, and then my daughter wanted a tin of, or a plastic bin of salad.
Right.
So I thought, in my head, I'm doing that.
Right.
It's got to be about this.
Yeah.
And when it was $16, so then I went, the apples.
Yeah.
Or $8.
So, but at least I give the, now this, I was embarrassed, but at least the cashier.
How many pounds did you have in the bag?
Well, here's the thing. So I just grabbed the bag. She wanted cherries, $4.49 a bag. That's not bad, I guess. He goes, He goes, these are $13. And I go, $13? And he goes, yeah. He goes, I thought they were $4.49. He goes, well, that's a pound, not for the bag. So now I'm in a line.
What are you going to do?
And, yeah, there's the cashier. There's the bagger. Am I going to look like a piker
parcel
here now?
Right.
So I'm like, ah. He goes, do you really want these? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, are you sure? I mean, to the point where.
Oh, he's a good employee.
Yeah, he kept like, now, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, go ahead. Because I'm like, I'm not going to say take them off.
Well, even he knew that people were commenting, obviously,
yeah,
before.
Yeah.
Because he would bring that up.
Yeah.
Why would he bring it up otherwise?
Because I didn't even know how much cherries. I'm like, was that a bad price? So I came home and I said, I hope you really like those cherries.
Oh, that's nice.
Because those right. were
that's not bad enough. I'm sitting here with no air conditioning. You son of a bitch. And now you're talking about my cherries?
Take her one little bright spot.
Really, I hope she took the bag of cherries and beat the hell out of you.
And she even said, whoa, $13 for cherries. She goes, I wanted them, but I didn't want them that bad.
You better enjoy these cherries.
So then I said, you said you wanted cherries.
Oh, wow.
If I didn't come home with cherries. So then.
He's a day at the beach,
so
isn't
then,
he?
So wow.
After a tsunami.
So then I think she felt guilty. So she said, do you want some cherries? And I said, no, those
oh
are
my
your
God.
Cherries.
How does she not go to the knife drawer and just pull it out and start stabbing you?
Those are your $13 cherries.
You think he's annoying?
I would go with a fork.
You think he's
because
annoying
it would
on
take
the show?
A little longer.
Imagine him in private when he can let out all this nonsense.
Those are your $13
cherries. $13
cherries. So enjoy them. I'm not.
Yeah,
you know.
And here you've heard the story when she goes and gets him these drinks that he likes, and if they're wrong. He gives her total hell, and the poor woman just want they were. It was on sale. That
right.
was the deal.
Well,
that's all she wanted to do. Hey, I picked you up some drinks.
No,
that
it
you
was
like.
My water enhancer. I like
it a certain way.
I like Mio. I don't want Crystal Light.
The cops have been to your house more than that woman who ended up in the suitcase. I guarantee it. You just haven't said it.
They swing by right after the other house.
Oh.
No.
Or she's just so beaten down. This is why they don't have air conditioning, is because she's afraid to mention it. Because imagine if she's getting this kind of pipe just for buying cherries when they get an $80 you know, bill on the electric.
About,
oh, my
we
gosh.
We save so much on not using the air conditioning. You put it into the cherries.
No,
how about that?
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I guess.
Everything is separate.
Yeah.
It's a separate
entity. I'm not taking the blue line. There are young toughs on there.
Well,
they're going to take my wallet and my glasses.
Doesn't that tell you? If you see somebody with a luggage bag, doesn't that tell a ne'er-do-well? This person probably is going to the airport. This person probably has extra cash.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, hey, all I know is, I'm always overprotective, and I've never been mugged. I've
now
never been
you
carjacked.
Put it out there.
I don't go to bad neighborhoods. I'm always careful. And everybody that goes, oh, what, you make a big deal? Then you go into their history. Well, yeah, I mean, I have gotten robbed. I have this. Well, because you're too devil may care.
Yeah.
I'm street smart.
Sure you are. I don't go
same
to,
way hermits are.
I don't go to bad neighborhoods. Who does? I mean, if you live in one, I understand, but who just drives? Well, if you want to buy drugs, I guess.
Yeah. Well,
but
I mean,
not many people just drive to a bad neighborhood.
No, but I always am very careful. Okay, don't, like, I know somebody that takes a route to get here every day, and they can take the highway, which would be fine, but they take side streets. And
because
they,
the highway's backed up.
Right.
Whatever. And they go through some horrible neighborhood.
And have they ever been troubled by these?
I don't know, but he even says, well, yeah, there's some red lights I just go through.
Oh.
I'm like, well, then what are you... What
and
are,
I think
what,
that person is sitting right here.
No, and I'm like, why
when
do you...
When you say going through red lights...
No.
Ding.
No, no. And I'm like, why do you tempt fates?
Because...
I don't tempt the fates.
You have to be stronger than your surroundings.
No.
In the same way I got pulled over in Austin because I was driving while white.
Well, see? And what did they say? Why are you here?
Why are you in this
see,
neighborhood?
I don't get that question.
But nobody was bothering me. I saw some young toughs on the corner selling whatever they were selling.
I
and
don't want to be in that. I don't even want to be
right,
in
well,
the thing.
So far, so good. But I think now you've put out some kind of atmosphere where, watch, today, my wallet's gone. My wallet's gone.
That karma train is coming.
And I got this text. Hey, Gary, are those cream-colored pants you're wearing, or are you just happy to see me? Boy, my cream-colored pants. I got black pants
They're
on today.
Dark.
There you go.
It looked like it was going to rain, and I didn't want to be caught with see-through pants.
See-through again.
But it's as far as it's 10:30 when we're recording this, 3:30 now, But it cleared up nicely. It looked like hell this morning.
Beautiful.
Is this hopefully going
to
be the deal? I think a lot of these
storms
have fallen
storms.
Apart and all that nonsense.
It's like a pop-up store, Target store.
They're calling them pop-up storms.
Storms.
And I've never heard that before, but you're right. It's a pop-up storm.
Yeah.
Like a pop-up store.
They've never
they come,
pop-ups.
They go.
Yeah.
They're pop-ups.
Well, now what's nice about that...
They don't pay rent.
If you're the weather guy, it's a nice fallback. Because you say, well, it's a pop-up storm. So I don't know if it's going to really rain or not. So you throw that out there, and if it does rain, you say, told you, pop-up storm. If it doesn't, you go, told you, pop-up storm.
That's a new way to cover their base.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I love our meteorologists, but they all seem to be erring on the side of caution. Like yesterday, it was supposed to be mostly cloudy, and it was severe clear until well after noon.
It was beautiful.
And they had storms predicted last night, and then they all got on, well, the cool lake has... decimated the storm, so maybe in some areas.
I think we got a little rain.
But it wasn't
nothing.
What they were showing on the radar.
Just,
it was coming from McHenry. Look out. Grab your ankles.
Noticed my drive looked a little damp, but nothing like...
It's damp. It's nice driveway. It's damp. For a taste of Melrose this weekend.
That's right. Over
you
there.
Want a nice
over,
damp
over
driveway?
25th over by 25th and Lake.
Now, your driveway might be damp because Irish travelers have... come to your door and said, we'll resurface your driveway for $100.
I had to laugh because yesterday my next-door neighbor had that done. He had, I think, new asphalt put on. And that was I was watching to see
if they were Irish travelers.
Is this legit or not? But I could smell the tar. So
okay,
like, okay,
good. And then they put the empty 5-gallon buckets with the handle across them.
Well, see, that's the problem because I looked out because I heard all this noise next door. I'm like, what's going on? And all of a sudden I see this big spike or this big piece of wood on my grass. Because
oh,
it's
boy.
Next to, you know, that's what, if you're going to put the thing up that says don't cross.
Right.
And I'm like, well, hey, what's going on there? What are you ruining my grass for? But then I saw that he was putting up a little sign, like, on each side of the thing. To put.
So you didn't come out?
No, I didn't come
possibly
out.
Get mugged.
I didn't come out.
Because you don't go out. That's how you get mugged.
And it looked legit. Although, like I said, I did open up the blinds.
Sure, Mr. Kravitz.
Oh, sure.
To look out there to see what was going
so
on.
So these Irish travelers, they'll say, hey, we'll resurface your driveway for $100, and then you give them the $100, and then about an hour later you go out there, and it's all Hershey's chocolate or something. It's not anything like asphalt or tar or whatever.
Well, at least it's a nice fondue.
But they do something that makes it look like it's moist.
Right. But then the first rain, it all washes away, and they're well on their way to Indiana or something. Have the drunks started drinking early for the show today? No drunks have called.
So far.
I told people you're welcome to call during the taping. We're in the same studio. Numbers are all the same, so that wouldn't change.
The show trends high with alcoholics, we found.
Yes, it does.
And what's wrong with that?
Nothing.
All right. A few moments of obligations, and we march on. Gary Meyer on WG. Well, didn't Jimmy just say that?
Yeah, baby.
It's Freeform and all that. Okay, he covered that. George on the blower. George, how you doing?
I want to be the first person to call a show that's not actually streaming live over the air, Gary. How are you, buddy?
Good.
This is your cousin, George Bliss.
It's George Bliss, friend of the show. I mentioned yesterday that people were welcome to call between 10 and 2 when I'm taping this because it really doesn't matter if you know what I'm talking about. We're just all hanging out for a couple hours. And or
absolutely.
Make it 4 hours, and you did that, and we're talking about the Irish travelers that sometimes come to your door to resurface your driveway.
Oh yeah,
that's on the thing. But here, you'll like this, George. Listen to this text. This is a great idea, and this is from Rob in New Berlin, Wisconsin. Let's get a webcam going so we can see inside the sausage factory. Now, I didn't think about that, but we've got cameras in the studio. We could have had the cameras on.
Could you have done that, though?
I don't know if they're ready to be flipped on.
Well, I know
on.
In theory, but...
Yeah, if they're ready to go, we could just flip that on, and you could at least see the show when that happened, when it's being done live. And then if you didn't do that, you could hear it in its regular time. But, George, that's something you usually would say to me. Hey, now that you're doing this for one day, at least flip the cameras on.
They have so many capabilities there, okay? And, you know, they do it over at the other station there, the sports station. They do it downstairs, and they do it on Comcast. So if we can't have Gary Meyer on a clean stream, high-def stream, what is wrong with this world?
Oh,
so,
right.
Hey, we can institute that. That's called TriCasting, by the way. They should do it, and we can hear you and see you. And I want to see Leslie, Kylie, and Elton Jim, and you know, all the his hairpiece. I mean, people need to see that.
They need to see it.
Nice.
They really
That's
do.
That's right.
Wasn't that a wouldn't that take a BF-242 cord, George?
No, I think that's going to be a TL-259, but close.
Yeah, George has all these things in his head that I don't understand about how to hook stuff up, but he does it, and I like having a friend who knows that stuff because I will need his expertise.
And one that has a relative who owns Miller's Pub.
Right.
For free meals.
We might as well give it a plug. It's been there 66 years at 134 South Wabash. And listen, Franklin McCormick used to go there, and Gary Meyer was there back in the day. So we've got his picture up there, and we need a new picture of you, Gary.
I know. It's the picture's so old. I have a beard. I haven't had a beard for 30 years.
Oh, my goodness.
And I think you have Miller's a partner, there, too. No.
I haven't
you haven't had that for 21 years.
I haven't had any kind of beard on my face or anything for a while. So I will get him a new picture. But, yeah, Miller's Pub, it's one of those things, been in the loop, as George mentioned, for 60-some years, and just cranks it out day in and day out, when other restaurants sometimes last 6 months. So your uncle's obviously done something that people like.
You know what? Now, don't laugh, because we served the Rick Kogans of the world for years. We believe in media, and Colin and Rick has been there for years. His father used to go there. It goes way back to Irv Cups in it. And let's be honest, none of them ever paid a penny. Generous family.
I know Cup didn't. Even if they charged him.
Even did Harry Carey or Jack Brickhouse or even some recent people, believe it or not, that you wouldn't believe, especially politicians, to name a few, which I wouldn't do to embarrass them. But the truth is, you know, the media has to work together with restaurants. They have to do it.
Okay, but there's no excuse not to pay. You're working. If you're in the media, you're probably making a decent living. I hope they leave mega tips then. And I know Cup didn't.
He never left anything.
In fact,
he never left anything.
I was at a show at the Vic, and he was there, and the waitress we had was crying. And we said, what's wrong? Cup left me a quarter tip. Yeah, and he was notorious for that because he'd have surgery or some hospital thing done. Right. Then he'd mention the doctors in his column, and I'm assuming that's because he didn't want to pay his bill.
Thanks to Dr. Feindelberg at Rush St. Luke's.
He did
St.
a fantastic
Luke's.
Job on my U-joint.
At Illinois Masonic.
Well, I never pick up a tab anywhere.
But I do. I tip very well.
Listen, that Rick Kogan thing yesterday at the end of the day, I mean, sometimes I pee in my pants driving, listening to Leslie's very, very pure traffic reports. And you guys come on with this extended segmentation. It's fantastic.
Segmentation?
Segmentation.
Yeah, that's a segmentation.
Yeah.
That looked like a segmentation to me, now, boss.
That's fantastic. When the show turns racist, I find it distasteful because many friends of mine are of color, and I'll break bread with them over at Manny's Deli.
Studs was a huge lover of the black race. He used to have black people over all the time, and this was not socially acceptable.
We would
in
meet
the
up
40s.
At Soul Queen Cafe.
Right. He used to play her Eye on the Sparrow, that famous gospel song. He used to do that.
Yeah. Mahalia Jackson was often at his quarters.
And all of a sudden, the knock on the door, and it was Billie Holiday.
That's just the kind of people that he would hang out with.
At the checkerboard lounge till 4 in the morning.
And his wife, Studette.
Strange fruit.
And little did we know, it was Willie Dixon. And he played blues all night.
Yeah. Well, I got to head over to William Goat because my busboy Payne will be handing me
tip very well. I don't pay, I do pay.
All right, George, this is how it works. If you want to call your friends and say, hey, just call them because they're just rambling along.
I have many friends that listen to you. I'm going to get an email right now. Remind them.
George, are you behind the Softball Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Do you have something to do with that?
Yes, I'm the spokesman for said organization, yes.
How's that going along?
We dedicated the building about 3 weeks ago, and it's beautiful. It's 7500 West Harrison. You got to come out and see it.
That one that's right on the corner off of the highway?
Yes, it is, Jim.
Like right off the Des Plaines?
Des Plaines and Harrison.
Yeah, the Des Plaines exit, yeah.
What?
Yeah, he's close to that. I don't want to brag on Jim, but he used to play softball pretty good in his day. You remember, he played baseball at his high school. He was good. He was a
Baba Shrivel?
Yes, and he actually came to one of my celebrity games a couple of years ago, but with Stephen Holt, I think, and Danny Souza and Amy Jacobs.
Oh, he's a celebrity now.
Oh, sure.
Well, he was kind enough to come out. He's a good guy.
And I sang with Jim Peterik, remember?
I like how you talk about him like he's dead.
I know.
He's only dead
to you, Gary. Yeah.
Sounds like a Robin Williams tribute.
All right, I don't mean to get into your business here, but who would be in the Softball Hall of Fame? What's that all about?
Are you joking? How about Mayor Daley? How about
Smith?
Who?
Knuckles Smith.
Knuckles Smith?
I don't know.
Knuckles Smith,
all
yeah.
these guys that break their knuckles.
Have right, to, playing have those guys 16-inch softball.
you always break at least
okay,
a.
Let's put it this way. From the 1930s, more people played softball than any single sport in Chicago. And we had bigger television ratings when I was on Sports Channel back in the day than the White Sox. So let's just get this straight, okay? It's mm-hmm. Chicago's game. It's played. Hey, Gary, your dad probably played it after the war.
I played it. I remember when I was a kid, softball was huge.
His nickname was Gary Clincher Meyer.
Yeah.
Gary Clincher Meyer, absolutely. Yeah, but we put a lot of money into it. We have Bob Serrata as one of our also supportive guys who's been very nice to us.
He's not a good player, though, is he?
He's actually a very good neighborhood player.
He seems too tender.
Levels, okay?
He seems fragile to me.
when I played against him, he grounded out.
But we're going to have a Gary Meyer celebrity softball game someday. You guys are going to have a lot of fun.
How big is this museum? I mean,
it's a pretty nice, I've seen it. Like I said, you get off the Eisenhower at Des Plaines. And it's right on the corner, right where the stoplight is. And I was impressed at how big of a building it is.
Well, if you see the interior, your teeth will drop. We spent over $500,000 on it.
And there's only like four balls and two bats in there.
No. This thing is going back to 1897. The game was started at the Farragut Boat Club, okay, which is a famous Chicago thing. Do I sound like Rick Colgan or not?
No, you don't. Why would how would you get money for this? Who would give money? I'm not trying to dump on your little museum here, but
no.
It's hard to get money for anything these days, and you have a softball museum.
We have about 10 contributors. They're publicly known. Rich Melman is one of them. Fritz Zimmerman owns March Manufacturing. We had Vienna Hot Dogs gave us a lot of money. Molex Corporation gave us a ton of money. De Beer Corporation, which is a famous athletic company. All kinds of people, MB Bank, Glenview Bank. So we've raised about $500,000, and the building is absolutely incredible. If you see the flooring in it alone, it'll shock you. The bathrooms were worth more than your bathroom, Gary.
You don't have to attack because I said something. Well, I know.
They saved a bunch of money on the Mitts wing, though. They could just eliminate that right. And give them fancy bathrooms instead.
I know Rich Melman.
There's an outdoor plaza with it as well, okay? So it's a two-phase program, and it's as nice as the Italian-American Hall of Fame or any of them. It's really beautiful.
I know Rich Melman, the restaurant czar, played a lot, and they would travel around the country, right?
Their team was called Lettuce.
His team was called Lettuce. I was one of the coaches in that team from 90 to 94, and they won three national championships in that span of time. Lost one, a big one in Kingman, Arizona, which, by the way, we did do at Sports Channel, which is no longer in existence, unfortunately. And we had a lot of fun with it. I'm telling you, we had more listeners, viewers than you could shake a stick at. We were the future before .fm was the future, quite frankly. Okay.
And this thing is open every day. And what's in there? What do you go see?
Lots and lots of memorabilia and a big media wing where we have lots of broadcasts, radio broadcasts, and old videotapings. We had a videographer for years that we hired that taped from about 1963 forward. Lots of games, lots of interviews.
They have Stash Klazuski's finger splint, too.
Sure.
All of that.
All the stuff.
Do you have some of those pictures in there? Oh, yeah. It's incredible. You might be surprised. And, Leslie, you had an interest in it for some reason. Why did your husband play or you played?
No, I just, when I found out that there was a new museum popping up in Forest Park.
Yes.
Dedicated to softball, I couldn't help but bite. And then I heard your name.
Why Forest Park?
The headquarters, the Wrigley Field of Softball, is in Forest Park, at that field called Forest Park Fields, where everybody plays for years. And that's the big key place every July for the World Series of Softball, which just concluded. And we get about between 4,000 and 8,000 people out there at that game. It's unbelievable.
And what is the status of softball now in Chicago?
Status of softball now is unfortunately not as good as we would like. There's maybe only about 50 teams. and about 20 of them are fully funded. And, you know, about 20 guys, so maybe about 400 to 600 people are playing it. Back in the day in the 30s, 30,000 people on a single day would play it. They would have 20,000 people out at Grant Park in the 50s watching games.
Was that all 16? Was that still 16-inch, or were those 12-inch?
Yeah, let's make it clear. 12-inch is for sissies, Leslie.
Okay.
People that wear gloves don't need to be in this conversation.
Okay.
I mean, we're talking guys like Gary Meyer, no gloves, Jimmy Toronto. We're talking legendary names. We don't talk sissy names, okay, guys that wear
but
gloves.
But I prefer to play 12-inch because I like wearing a glove.
Uh-huh.
It's like
you're Michael Jackson.
It's like wearing a condom during sex.
No, it's ridiculous. That ball is
raincoat in the shower.
The first three innings, if you're in the field, you don't want the ball hit to you because at least by the fourth inning, it starts to soften up.
Okay,
but I used to play third base, and that thing was like a rock.
George, why has it fallen out of favor?
Quite honestly, the people started taking up soccer. Kids are into video games. The park district screwed us over the last 20 years. They charge big money to put a league into a park when it used to be almost free. And everybody's moved to the suburbs. So the game is very powerful out in the western suburbs, northwest suburbs, and it's picking up somewhat right now in Iowa. There's a big tournament today in Iowa. There's about 22 teams out there. It's hard to do. It's Chicago's game, baby. It's Carl Sandburg all the way, okay? The kids want to do video games, and they want instant gratification, and they want to play soccer is what we found to be the problem with it. It's a big transition. But we're trying to make it come back. As a matter of fact, we're scheduling a softball game with the Jackie Robinson Little League team. I'm working on that today. We're going to have that in about 3 weeks. We hope that will bring out a lot of people to see what we do. We need to demonstrate the game and get it going again. That's what we need to do.
How about the story that's on the front page of the Sun-Times today? One of the JRW players is homeless.
Oh, no. My goodness gracious.
Yeah. The mother lost or got her hours cut back. And that
living
led
at
to
friend's house.
Living at friends' homes. Yeah, he's been sleeping at homes of friends and family since June after his mom's work hours were cut.
Wow!
But you got to imagine it's on the front page. JRW, this family will be taken care of pronto.
Well, now that I'm on your great show and a friend of yours, and honored to be it. You know, years ago I was mentored by a guy named Joe Gentile that owned a small radio station. Jim knows him well. We used to make fun of us all the time.
I worked with Joe Gentile. I was on that station. Yeah, I did news for them.
Now, this station, 4 watts, right?
Oh, it was
small. Well, actually, it was between 1,000 during the day and 1,500 in the afternoon. It was WJJG. It's no longer there.
It was in a hotel.
Guess what it is now, Gary? It's WCKG.
Yeah.
They bought it.
CKG's call letters.
CKG.
And
yes,
it's now in the big tower in Oakbrook.
Look at this guy.
Yeah.
The reason why I'm saying that Joe had a considerable amount of wealth, and when he would hear these stories, and I could say this now because I was on his board, when he would hear a story like this, anonymously, his wife and I would go to these homes and donate lots of money. As you know, he donated over $35 million to Loyola to build a gym and another $10 million at St. Ignatius. So,
and he made his money today with car dealers.
He had one car dealership, but his big claim to fame was he bought Chrysler stock when they were literally bankrupt in 1976, and it was bailed out by the federal government, by Jimmy Carter, and him and Leah Iacocca got together. He got something like 1 million shares at a buck a piece, and he made over $150 million in 1 year on stock. That's when he decided to donate to Loyola. I was there in 1991 when he donated that gym. And, you know, Gary, you and I talk about the Catholic education all the time. He was a big supporter of that in the city of Chicago. But to get back to this charitable stuff, he would have been there today with a check for $10,000 or $20,000 because I delivered many of those checks on his behalf. It was all anonymous when he was living. So it's a sad day. But hopefully some rich guy will come up and take care of this kid because you can't have that. A homeless kid that's on
I would imagine because of his notoriety now, and it's on the front page, by 5 o'clock tonight, they'll be moving into a nice apartment.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to go.
I hope so.
Fully furnished.
There's no way they're going to let the air out of the balloon of what this story is for Chicago and let this kid just wander around homeless with his mother forever. So consider that a story that completes itself by 5 o'clock tonight.
Yeah, but the continuum of that is, and you and I can talk about this all the time, not to get sad here, but all the other kids that are homeless right now that aren't on that baseball team, what's going to happen to them? So Okay. It makes you think for Labor Day once in a while. It does. It really does.
Well, yesterday there was that story. There's going to be $10 million allotted for the Safe Passage program, which is...
Unbelievable.
Yes.
They need more.
Well, isn't it shocking?
Shouldn't need any.
Yeah.
Right.
After you come off this JRW story and then you get this one, and it's really a personal bodyguard so kids can go safely to school like we're in some kind of war-torn country. That's insane that $10 million could be used for, as you said, homeless people or whatever. And here it's just to have people escort kids to school. That's ridiculous. That means some faction has taken over our streets. How did that happen?
Well, the story of the Safe Passage thing is pretty obvious. They pay firemen overtime when they come in the morning, and they're just, they also pay these crossing guards. So these firemen are not going to do it for free, or police and some community organizers, because I've kind of watched this program. These kids are in such danger, like down the south side and the west side, and even Austin now, it's terrible. They have to walk these kids to school, because if you walk over a gang line, you're going to get hit by a bullet. So how are they going to do it? They need people that are, you know, adults, such as fire and police, and they have to pay these people
is
overtime.
Is that school
that's
board money,
or
is that city money?
Where's that money?
The $10 million came from the state.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay, that came from Petquin. Okay. Yeah. There's a lot of private money in there, too. I know a lot of money came from the Crown Foundation.
But in the meantime, it's a job that kids' parents should be doing, walking your kid to school, being aware of what's going on in the neighborhood, and now it's become this multi-million dollar thing, which tells me it's never going
away. Like we have $10 million to spare. But that's ridiculous that the gangs, what they're saying is the gangs are controlling sections of the city, completely in control of them, and we're going to have to keep paying more to make it this way or that way. It's like Curly in the Three Stooges in the bathtub where there's a leak and he puts a pipe on the end of one pipe and the leak comes out the next pipe, and before you know it, he's imprisoned in the pipes and it's still leaking. This is just a Band-Aid of, oh, well, we'll just escort them to school. But they're still out there. The problem's still out there.
And that was meant to be a temporary thing based off of the closing of the schools and the strike and the kind
of tension. So they had to go to different schools.
Yeah, and that was a whole thing, and they weren't used to walking these routes, and they needed to get there, blah, blah, blah. Dangerous neighborhoods now that they weren't in before, and now this has become par for the course.
That's
a regular line item now.
This goes back to my statement years ago, martial law or get the National Guard out. We're already paying for them. They're already in our state on the payroll. If this is what we need, roll them out. They're already on the payroll. Use that $10 million for something else.
Hey, Leslie, I watch Fox News too, but you know, let's just get down the breast. 68% of these kids down in Englewood, and they are in single family homes. Of those single family homes, about one third of their mothers are on drugs. This is just facts of life, okay? So they can't get to school safe because they don't even have parents.
Well, and that's the problem. So we can keep throwing, like Gary said, we can keep throwing more pipes on this, but until you get to the cause of the leak, there's no point.
Yeah. So then we just, instead of trying to fix the problem at the start of the leak, we just keep adding on to the end of the hose, hoping that we'll have enough hose. You got to go back and kink it there, because they're going to just keep having kids if they're on drugs, and then we're going to have to take care of that. So that's going to just keep going.
So in the meantime, a 12-year-old is going to get involved in politics. He's not going to get safe passage. I mean,
well, I don't. The kids are caught in the middle of this as usual.
Yes.
But just to throw $10 million at it, okay, they're going to have bodyguards. And you'll sit here and think, wait a minute, why do we have sections of our city that are just completely out of control?
Well, what worries me, too, then, in another 10 years, we'll be talking about these workers.
Right.
Pensions. Right. And the fact that we don't have money to sustain the system the way it's been put together now, which is haphazardly.
Well, the problem is that the cultural aspect is a lot harder to solve than it is to throw $10 million and hire people to walk.
Again,
that's the problem.
You're never going to get anywhere because that's never going to be fixed, because people don't want to deal with that.
It needs to be addressed. It needs to be honest.
I guarantee you that most of these people that are in these bad situations, the kids or whatever, probably had a teenage mother. A large majority, teenage mother, and then as they get older and older, 15, 16, then if they have a kid, that's going to dump that kid into the system. There's no structure. Boom, gang comes along. Here's a few bucks. We'll be your friend. And this just keeps going. It's been going for decades. It's just getting worse.
I'm going to really get in trouble. The issue to fix a lot of this, not all of it, is to legalize drugs worldwide across the board. Because the minute you take the profit out of these gangs, and that's what they sell, they're thugs, they sell crack, drugs, marijuana, and guns. You take the profit out of that, it's going to reduce it quite a bit. Why would a kid go work at McDonald's for $9 an hour when he can make $1,000 on a corner?
He's not going to make $9 an hour either.
Not even.
So we're not legalizing crack here. I mean, we're not going to legal. That's never going to happen.
You have to legalize drugs across the board.
Across what board? What drugs?
Across the board in America, all drugs should be legalized.
All drugs?
What? Crack?
Yes.
Meth?
Well, what, and then treated as a health problem.
Let me tell you something. In Colorado, Leslie, you know this, over the last 12 months, the crime, flat statistic across the board, has gone down 67%. Talk to any Denver chief of police. Talk to any of them. Because they've legalized marijuana. That's the big one. So nobody gets arrested anymore for it, all right? By the way, I've never taken a drug in my life, all right? But you have to legalize it.
George, you're too broad in that.
Killer.
They're not going to legalize crack and meth and all that stuff. There's a difference between marijuana and crack and cocaine. They know that those others, besides marijuana, are very addictive.
So don't decriminalize it. Don't decriminalize it. Make a kid for two marijuana cigarettes go to jail for 24 months at Cook County Jail? Is that what you're talking
about? No. I'm talking about marijuana stays apart from what you're saying. You can't legalize crack.
But they're
what are we waiting for?
A lot of people are saying that instead of treating it as a punitive issue, it should be treated as a health issue. So while you aren't sending them away to prison, what you're trying to do is nip the drug use in the bud and not make it... worthwhile to build more prisons and all the infrastructure based on the problems, as opposed to just treating it like a health problem and not such a prison-oriented issue.
But then what does that do to our health system? If now
becomes a whole health issue.
We're already paying for it on that level. And
suddenly we're NPR.
We had prohibition. It didn't work. I mean, come on, let's get into these old arguments, right? You got to legalize this stuff because the criminalization factor is killing the prisons. They can't handle the kids. The drugs are all over the place, and the gangs are swooping
down. It's been about 60 years, and they still can't even legalize marijuana. How are you going to get meth legalized? You can't even get marijuana legalized for the last 60 or 70 years.
Jim, have you ever been in Japan?
No.
Okay. You've been in Amsterdam, right?
Yeah.
I suspect.
Yeah.
You know the issue there. It's legal. Are there any issues there with crime? Very little.
I understand that, but
does Japan legalize this stuff?
Actually, Japan does not. But they
why'd you mention Japan?
Have you been to Germany? It was just a travel log.
Actually, I have been to Germany.
Why is Japan in the discussion?
I understand that, but you got to remember, the United States is still very on the Puritan ethic, and people
don't want
to know or think that. We legalize drugs.
Right.
It's more philosophical than it is logical, but it's there.
It's true.
So we've gone from softball to speedball in about 10 minutes.
That's a nice way to tell.
This is what freeform is.
And that could be the problem solver right there. These kids need to play softball.
Play softball. Give them a bat and a 16-incher.
We're trying to do it. We're trying to get a couple games in the ghettos. We're trying to do it.
You know, games in the ghettos. What a nice selling point.
Games in the ghettos. We're going to do it.
There's your banner. Games
hey,
in the ghettos.
Why the heck aren't you playing music, Gary? I mean, I love some
of here's the other thing. What? Okay, I'm glad you brought that up. So George, he's always looking at things and analyzing, as you can tell. He said, why did you stop playing music? And I said, because they told me they don't want to pay the licensing fee anymore. And he looked it up and he said, it's only $200 and some a year.
$288.
Yeah. And I thought, okay. He said, you should pay it yourself, and I will entertain that. Now, I don't know if part of that was, because part of the discussion was, but you're not a music show. Why are you playing music? It's a talk show. But for the amount I was playing, it was just a break to go stretch your legs.
One or two songs a day.
Plus, it's sometimes, not even I wouldn't even say this is not... just a talk show. It's a personality show.
Freeform, baby.
Baby. No, but it's
not a...
It is a reflection of your personality, which includes music and topics. And
the reason I wouldn't play on music on the AM, they didn't pay the licensing fee on that either because there is no music. but there was no time. Right. I just had about 28 minutes an hour to do what I had to do. But there's more time in this format, and I thought, record here and there is not going to hurt anything, is it?
$288. That's the game's cable bill every month.
Let me explain a little bit. Hey, Jim, you know this. This is ASCAP, American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers. Now, there's three phases. On the big stations like Antique Media, AM, they do have to pay a little bit more. It's about $5,000 a year. When you're on the Internet, they have legislation now called alternative markets, which is they know that the market is less at this point. It's only $288 a year for ASCAP, okay? So, I mean, if they don't do it, it's ridiculous. All the Internet stations out there are playing bands.
So
and
like
by the way, those
tickets
from Ireland yesterday were awesome.
All those performers that played the Elbow Room last night.
That was awesome. That was great entertainment.
Last-minute edition.
So that's $20 a month, then?
Correct.
And, wait, why is it cheaper on the Internet? Because you've got these...
Doesn't go.
No, but...
Right now, the legislation...
What is Pandora?
Okay. That's a whole... I'm not going to get into the detail. Pandora pays about $5,500 a year to ASCAP. That's it. Okay? But they also do pay 7 cents a song to the artist, and Computer has talked about it. There's about three copyright laws out there right now.
Okay, so they're in a different arena than I would be.
Yeah, there's BMI, ASCAP, and there's a third one now that represents all the country people. All right, but just keep the ASCAP for now. They have three phases of the license. You're right now in what they call Internet radio. WGN.FM does not go across the air. So right now there's really not a lot of legislation out of the copyright law. So they have a fee of $288 a year. And that's it.
All right,
it's a bargain.
Pay that and play some music once in a while. I'm not going to go four or five songs every 15 minutes.
So just think, the money that we gave Johnny, that was 3 months worth of music.
Exactly.
Johnny from Michigan.
You gave him 40, yeah. I gave him 20. That was 3 months right there, down the tube.
Right.
So I could play some Turtles music.
Maybe you run it like Gary Myers' jukebox, and people pledge $5, and they get to pick a song or two.
And a tote bag.
You hear these artists talking about those services like Spotify and Pandora. They'll get these residuals, and it'll be
nothing.
$14. And the song was played 3 million times, and the way it's structured, and they're really trying to get out of that.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not fair to them, they claim, and they're trying to break away from the way this is handled. It's just insane.
But even when you played music on a music station, I mean, think about what an inexact science that was. Didn't you, like, once a month or one day a month?
No, 2 weeks every year.
Two weeks every year.
We would have to log all the songs we played from ASCAP and BMI, and then...
Correct.
We'd send those forms in, as all radio stations that play music did.
Correct.
And then out of that, you're right, they would somehow
be able to know
how often songs were played, and then they'd send checks to the artist.
How does Joe Walsh get a check out of that that's even close to the amount of times that a song was played over a year's time? I mean, that's crazy.
I know, but that's how they've been doing it.
He's the receiver of the – he's listed – and then all the paperwork comes in, and
no, I understand that, what I'm saying is that there's no way that had to be fair, because just to grab 2 weeks out of 365,
just assuming that one artist's song got played twice and another one was in hot rotation and got played 10 times as many times.
Ooh, CHR, current hit radio. Listen to these old trends called hot rotation.
MOR.
Yeah. All right.
MOR.
All right. Now we're getting into that area.
Play music and go. You know, Gary, I've always said the philosophy of my life is you got to be a rule breaker. Because if you're going to go along with everything they say downstairs, you're going to lose, okay? You need to break these rules. You need to play. Who knows more about music than Gary Meyer? I asked you a couple of 10 years ago, and you knew the name of Motherload, okay?
All right, but I'm not Bob Straub. Trust me on that.
Well, you're close.
All right, so there's a wait right there. We'll lock the door. They won't be able to get in, and we will play music for 4 hours.
And that guy Elton Jim Toronto sitting across from you, oh, my goodness, his knowledge of music is, I hate to brag on, is really good. So
really? Have you tested it, really?
Do you know how many songs he's got on his iPod?
23,420.
24,000. Yeah, something like that.
All right, George.
All right, guys. Well,
thank you for stirring it up.
In free form.
Will do. George Bliss. Got this text. since you've got one last weekend to wear them, make sure you have... Make sure not to have any fashion accidents in your cream-colored pants.
Wow, that's...
That cream-colored pants thing has hit...
Trending.
Has hit some mark. It's tickling something in the back of your head.
Well, every
because
one of
I think
stories.
Every one of us has had a moment where we... And it feels so good to wear that cream and white, and it takes all of 10 seconds in the city to find something to muck them up.
I think your accidents always revolve around your cream-colored pants.
The one that will go down as the favorite, I'm guessing, amongst everybody... In New York last year when I
That's the candy bar.
Sat on the candy bar in the cab. And I know it was a candy bar because it had that Hershey imprint. And when we got in line to get on
Because it's really embarrassing to turn to somebody and go, could you smell this?
Well, I'm glad you said that because when I got out of the cab and met the rest of my family, I'm standing there. My daughter goes, you're not going to like this.
And, she knows you.
And I go, what? She goes, there's some brown stuff on the back of your pants. And I almost had that moment of, anybody want to tell me what it is? So when she looked at it, it did have the Hershey imprint. So I knew it was a chocolate bar. What kind of stunad leaves a chocolate bar on the seat of a cab, maybe to get this result?
In the summer.
But not to see the result. There would be nowhere near me getting out of the cab and then...
That's the nearest of ne'er-do-well moves that they just did it on purpose.
And that was the summer, right? So it was melting.
Oh, it was about 90 degrees. We were taking that Circle Line tour around Manhattan, and my mother-in-law was nice enough to say, let's go over to this little concession stand and see if they have some wet paper towels they'll give us, which they did. And then we went over to this picnic table, and that's... scene of me standing there.
Well, that's the story.
That's the story.
It's not even the melting of the chocolate.
No, it's her wiping my butt on the picnic table and people staring at us, and I thought, we look like we just escaped from Bellevue. Yeah,
they're like, well, he is a little troubled.
He's slow. Yeah, okay.
And then she spit on a tissue and cleaned his mouth, too.
They're like, yeah, his bag unfortunately punctured.
It happens. And I got this text as we tape early. I talked yesterday about those sex boxes in Zurich.
Oh, yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
And this text says, how about setting them up during events such as Lollapalooza? They'll generate enough cash to where... And it's skipping here to something else. Where's the rest of it? To where we won't have to worry about our debt or something on that level.
And basically the idea was they were kind of like little mini...
Mayor Shorty doesn't have to raise taxes. There it is.
Many sex
They look like, boxes, to me, those stalls where you wash your car by yourself with a wand. But they look nicer than that, but it is that kind of look.
Well, there's a wand in there.
Yes, there is. And probably a hose.
A bunch of hose.
Yeah, they're sex boxes. And apparently they work very well in Zurich, which is where we got the idea for those cows years ago. So if we're borrowing from Zurich, how about a Michigan Avenue sex boxes?
Right there. I'd buy one.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. Honey, do you mind if I stop at a sex box before I come home?
Why don't you go talk with your girlfriends, and I'll just stay here at the sex box for a while.
I mean, I wonder if those sex boxes, they've got to be somewhat obvious on the street, right? Because I have to know where to go.
All right, what are you worried that we're going to...
No, I'm just guessing. Is it something that is out on a major street where the public
is going
or can the public see
the pubic? that's not right.
No, I mean, I just don't know if there's little kids walking by, and meanwhile,
I'm sure they have it off to the side somewhere.
Okay.
They're nice little cabanas.
Yeah,
and they have a little cafe in there.
It's like
the adult superstores along the expressways. They look like Stuckies because they were once.
It's a pop-up for a pop-up. Yeah. You got your pop-up storms, pop-up stores, now pop-up sex boxes.
Well, it's better than, I guess, having that being done in alleys where you know it's being done. So at least what I like about that is that they are at least coming clean. We know this is happening. Let's not pretend that it's not.
Many
so let's just provide something
no problem with this.
Yeah, let's
They've
provide
been dealing
something.
With it for years, and they just said, hey, it's not something that we should police because it's none of our business, but we'll make it clean, and as you said, and
right.
Welcome to Las
disease
Vegas.
Disease-free. And well, right.
How many viaducts?
How about Vegas?
Yeah.
Right.
Right in our own country because Nevada is all desert. What are we going to do here? Gambling. Got gambling and horse.
Horse.
Over by there.
Meanwhile,
but
we have these.
Want the horse to be safe.
Meanwhile, we have these viaducts and these skeevy alleys and skeevy streets. And that's where you go.
And if you've ever driven on Lake Street towards the United Center, there's your corridor.
There's a whole town there. That, and I don't know what's going on the underpasses along the Eisenhower at Austin and Harlem, but somebody seems to be just hoarding clothes under there.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that.
And
up in the corner of the...
Yeah. Where, so you assume there are probably people sleeping there, but now all of their belongings have slipped down the embankment and are stuck up against a chain-link fence, and it's very unsightly.
Why would they put the fence just at the end? Why not fence the whole thing?
That's what I'm kind of wondering. It seems like, well, we need to do something about this problem. Nothing that would actually fix the problem, but... So they have the fence there, but people are still obviously getting underneath the viaduct. And then on top of that, nobody's cleaning out. Seriously, it looks like at least 10 loads of laundry that have slipped down into this.
That's what that viaduct looked like on Cicero Avenue right before you got on the Stevenson from Midway.
Right.
That one right before you made the turn, several people were living up in that crevice. Yeah. And I think somebody finally said, after I remarked many times, this stretch from Midway to the expressway is the first time people see Chicago. So at least clean up that abandoned gas station and
that
then that wall of graffiti.
Abandoned, right. Yeah.
That's right there. You can't miss it. And then there was that dead possum on its back for about a week. And somebody suggested they put a sign, "Welcome to Chicago," in its little paw.
Well, that's where there are people out there right now who are having fun finding roadkill, attaching Mylar balloons to them that say
serious?
"Get well," and then taking photos and sharing them on the interwebs.
Oh, is this the latest?
It's a fun thing to do. Well, and it's kind of cute when you see a dead deer with a Mylar balloon that says "Get well" attached.
Well, I tell you, you don't see on Lower Wacker since they've
fenced that whole thing.
Yeah, you don't see that whole cardboard box city.
No, because they built when they redid it, they did all the fencing where you can't get in there.
Yeah.
But now the fencing down there looks like it could very well double as cages.
Yeah, it does look
a
little...
If there's an apocalypse, that's where they're going to start storing people.
It does look a little imposing.
Yeah.
And they're still working on that Riverwalk where that lane is closed. If you travel Lower Wacker, they're going to stretch that out for how many years?
Man.
It's supposed to be done soon, but they ran into some problems.
We got a problem here. That's going to cost something.
There was flooding, then the barge sunk there, and now we've had more flooding.
Yeah, that's the way things are done here.
Yeah.
Oh, we didn't see this. This.
could have imagined there'd be rain.
We're going to have to put that on the bill now.
Oh, they do. I have seen a few of the refrigerator box cities down the other way if you go toward, like, Illinois. And you take Lower Wacker
that
before.
And lower Wacker, there's still a lot of people living down there.
Yeah, and I get a little scared. I'll go right
through. Oh, here we go, the Tufts. These are old Tufts.
I'll go right through the stop sign.
As opposed to the young Tufts that are on the blue line.
I go right through the stop sign. Okay. I don't even wait. It's too scary. It's dark.
Other people stop there and give them blankets and food.
No.
And you're running stop signs.
Yeah, the other day, you know, I take this one street. It's a kind of a back street to get to a major thoroughfare that I go to get to the highway. And the other day, here's a guy in a motorized wheelchair now.
Oh, he's living fancy, isn't
he? And
he didn't pay one red cent.
And so we're at the stoplight, and this does not have a lot of traffic because it's kind of behind a bunch of stores, behind a strip mall. And so there's about four or five cars, but we have to stop at this light before we turn right. And here's this guy in his motorized wheelchair begging, coming up to every window.
Then your point is?
My point is, what are you doing? I'm in a stoplight.
What are you doing? You're in a motorized wheelchair. You're living large.
No.
You son of a...
I'm at a stoplight. I don't want to be accosted. Okay, he comes right up to my window.
How about a little sign you can put in your window? Do not accost me.
Well, it's just, it's one thing if, like Leslie's saying, fine. If you're sitting there at a corner or you have your sign and I walk up and I say, fine. but you don't come up on your wheelchair.
You don't
wheelchair.
Go driving yeah. up to me now.
You are not in the caste system I'm in.
No. I'm sorry. That is a little too intrusive.
Wow.
He literally stopped at every car, looked in the window right in your eyes, and when I saw this happening, first of all, I'm praying that the light will change so I don't have to have this confrontation. And then
There's
I did.
No confrontation.
Just roll the window up.
No. Shake your head.
You know
no.
what I did? I went and I looked in my glove compartment. Very busy in my glove compartment. So I leaned over
wow.
and said, just move on over.
I hope you never. The way you've set your life up, there might be some karma down the road where you're going to be robbed or
why?
Homeless.
It's going to be like Trading Places.
Yes.
Seriously.
And
he's going to be out.
But why?
Yeah, because you have really stacked up a
but
pile
why?
Of
why?
Bad karma.
Should I, if I want to give to this person, that's one thing. But you don't come knocking on my window on your motorized wheelchair.
I think the motorized wheelchair is the stumbling block here because he could have a motorized wheelchair and he's living.
No. I'm
really
not,
high
no,
off the hog.
That's not how I'm viewing it. I'm viewing it as that you've got this motorized wheelchair, and now you're coming to me.
Well, we know his history with people in wheelchairs.
Well,
that guy that came up the ramp in the parking lot here.
Good job.
And then Bibble goes, good job.
Well,
the guy shot and looked at him.
I was just trying to be nice.
Yeah, that's great.
The guy did that was a very steep ramp. And he went up it.
And he didn't ask me for any money.
And around it.
So I said, good job.
Good job, man.
He works in the Tribune. I see him all the time, and I'm thinking, oh, God.
you can't make eye contact.
Bibble when he did that. I wanted to crawl in my shoes.
And then the best was, as I said one time, he parked next to me. Because he drives. And he's got a van. And so I'm coming out, and I see him parked next to me. And for him to get in the van and get behind the wheel. I mean, it's a process. He's got this motorized door.
Thank God you were there to cheer him
yeah,
on.
Yeah, oh,
no, no. I ran back down the loading dock until he pulled away.
Yeah. There was a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where Larry David is confronted by this guy in a wheelchair because Larry went into a handicapped bathroom stall.
Right.
And this guy came in, and Larry went on about, nobody ever uses this stall.
Right.
Well, I'm here. And then they got into it.
And then the kicker was at the end of it, Larry goes in the bathroom, and the guy's using the normal bathroom.
So Larry confronts him on
that. And
Larry
goes, hey, what the heck you doing? That's my bathroom. Jerk.
Idiot. All right.
So you felt the uncomfortableness of that when it happened?
The what?
The guy shot me the look.
Oh. I really, one of those moments where you just want to, it's that commercial, is it Snickers? You want to get away, or is it Southwest? Whatever it is.
Well, you see, that was the thing. I'm a nice guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to give him encouragement to say, hey, I'm with you.
Right.
Way to go.
If people could carry tasers, you'd be tasered 3-4 times a day.
Because I care.
Yeah, that's what they're going to tell you.
Yeah. We heard about how much you care because you had to look inside your glove compartment as opposed to just giving the guy a dollar just shaking your head and saying no.
Oh, you would actually think you'd give him a dollar?
It depends.
Oh. No, that's just...
I generally don't like...
him to be less homeless or something.
You know,
I don't like when people panhandle on the street and are in the street, but...
Do you know the reason why I know where the Softball Hall of Fame is on Displains? The only reason I know is because I have to pass up the exit on First Avenue because every time you stop at the exit of First Avenue off the Eisenhower, it's Beggar's Row there. And it's about a 2-minute light, and you are accosted again.
Are they selling anything? Socks?
No, they're just sitting there.
That makes the guys at the Cicero Avenue exit on the Stevenson to Midway.
At least.
They're entrepreneurs.
They're entrepreneurs.
Yeah, these guys.
I'll tell you what. If I ever see those guys playing the drums and the trumpets, I'm giving them something because I was in the far lane when I realized, because usually it's just the guy with the tube socks.
Right.
And then one time, these guys, and they're good. They're doing choreography. And the light changed, so I was going for some money because I thought, now that's entertainment.
Okay. Well, no, this is not entertainment. And this is accosting. This is, once again, they walk up and down the row. They look in your car. It's very uncomfortable, and especially at night.
Very comfortable.
It's very scary.
But that's it. They're not touching your car. It's not like the guys who used to come in with their dirty water on Ontario Street and wash your windows. Right. And then they were grimier than they were in the first place. So they're not touching your car or anything. You just shake your head no.
I am driving east. I'm looking already. I passed the 17th Street exit. I'm already looking ahead up the ramp, way ahead. And if I see that the light is red, and I can see the guy walking, then I go right past First Avenue.
Okay.
And I go to this plane.
Your karma. I hope you have
a
good ride.
Why is it my karma?
Because if anything bad happens to you, and this is a made for TV movie. I could just see this happening.
Yeah. I only hope that they don't find out that there's a stop at this plane, so I'll have to keep going.
Yeah. This is how
I'm going out of my way already.
This sounds like a Twilight Zone episode where you're this kind of pontificating, I'm afraid of everybody.
Next thing, something bad happens, and all of a sudden he's
in a motorized wheelchair begging, and everybody's flipping him off or spitting on him.
Why, do you give to everybody?
No, I don't. Okay. But, man, the way you make these people sound, you avoid them like they're lepers.
You know what? I give.
Imagine him around lepers.
I give a good amount. Every year for tax, you know,
in
things.
Parking lots where I drop pennies and nickels.
There you go. Follow me around that way.
And these people can pick it up if they want it.
I give to charities.
That's my little nest egg.
Yeah.
She fixed it.
Leslie's going on vacation. A vacation every time she collects that money you drop.
You know, Japan? That's where I'm going.
Japan.
Free car wash.
Gary Meyer on the Streamliner, the Gare Force. Fred is checking in. Hey, Fred.
Hey, how's it going, Gary?
Everything's great. First time
caller, long time listener.
Thank you.
Hey, I wanted to talk to you in the past about a few things. I'm the guy that's always texting you about your mom's garters when you were doing the gutter commercials. And always had fun chatting back and forth with you about that. When you guys went on to the stream, you kept talking about how the different apps were available and iHeart and TuneIn, and I always gave my 2 cents worth about TuneIn being the better app.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys never discussed the stream reliabilities that, you know, there's multiple streams available for both of those, and those people that were worried about using up all their data packages were, you know, not being told that there's lower data rates available with some of these apps. And I don't know about iHeart because I don't use it, but TuneIn has a couple different stream qualities available. One's a lower rate, and both of them are, you know, completely, you know, fine. I haven't heard any quality difference over them, but, you know, I just wanted the listeners to know that there's a difference in the amount of data that you can, you know, use if you use the lower quality.
Oh yeah.
So
okay. So what is it? TuneIn that you prefer? You said.
Yeah, TuneIn is better, and for some reason, you know, we keep talking about how the buffering issue keeps coming up, and you know, the only thing that really relates to that is you know, if you're going in and out of a cell tower, you know, you're going to lose connection, and it's going to try and buffer to, you know, get your connection back up. You know, if it goes between a 3G connection and a 4G connection and you lose that, you know, it slows down and has to, you know, catch back up. And I go through that all day long. So it's never really, you know, a mystery. But at any rate, that's what I had to say about stream reliability. I had to say the other day when you guys were talking about William Shatner and his singing and all that, and we used to listen to this collection of different celebrities that did their little thing back in the 70s or 60s or whenever, and Shatner and Leonard Nimoy and a whole bunch of other people did, you know, like reading poetry and things like that, you know, and it's just, that Mr. Tambourine Man just cracked me up.
The comment when we played it and whenever I heard that was, were they thinking that people would buy this and go home and listen to it? And how many would you sell of these things? Because they were pretty awful.
We used to just played in our office, and when they used to allow us to do that, and we would just sit there and laugh and laugh and laugh. I mean, nobody ever took it. How can you take that seriously?
Well, I don't think they meant it as a comedy album, if I had to guess.
I got to tell you, we had the Leonard Nimoy album, and it was not for comedic reasons.
No.
It was because we thought Leonard Nimoy was awesome, and he also did this Ballad of Bilbo Baggins. Way before the Hobbits were hot.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe they sold more albums than I thought.
Well, this one was called Golden Throats. It was like a compilation of all of them.
I don't think Billy was intending any comedy out of this.
No, because the you know, it's called The Transformed Man, and it's a very dark, you know, serious photo on the cover. This is not a joke.
Yeah, he can call it not a joke all he wants, but it's,
yeah, it's a joke.
Hilarious.
It became a staple on every radio show over the years, so I don't know if that means anything in sales, but
no.
But this is when they were burning vinyl, and there was oil and vinyl, and we had plenty of oil, and it was cheap, so nobody cared. They put out anything.
And he's so full of himself, so.
Yep. All right, Fred, have a great Labor Day weekend.
Hey, you too. It was great talking to you.
Thank you.
I can't wait to hear what the show was all about.
I can't either.
By the way.
Interesting format.
Thank you.
Yeah, way to relate to your listeners.
Yeah, that Mr. I Can't Relate has filed several texts. How many people can tape their show early? Way to relate.
I cannot claim that as my own, but I have joined in on that. I enjoy doing that.
You're part of that now.
Yeah.
Okay.
The future.
All right. Thank you.
Jeff, talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye.
On a train in a station with plasticine porters, with looking glass ties. Suddenly, someone is there. At the turnstile, a girl with kaleidoscope eyes.
By the way, Gary, you're not trending.
I hope not, because I'm not on yet. I mean, when you hear this, I am. It's 4:43. 4:43. Okay. And
ish.
I am saying that when I am actually talking at 11:43. But no matter. And this text, Gary, the voice sounds less raspy today.
Yeah,
it does.
But he wouldn't be able to hear it yet. That's the funny part. Is they are now.
I got lost in there. Yeah, for a second.
Fooled you. But this is being sent now. It was sent at 11:38 this morning.
Maybe we've got a hacker.
Gary Meyer, number one with clairvoyance.
Maybe there's a hacker. They're hacking into
That's
our...
right. They're hacking everything else. Is this Friday morning's afternoon show, or is it Thursday afternoon's afternoon show? And then this one, posted by Susan, a producer posted on your FB page that you are on right now. She sent this at 11:37. And people are questioning that. You already said you were pre-recording, so I don't know why that's posted. What are they questioning? What sort of question? I mean, this is not rearranging much of your life, I don't think.
You still got to tune in at 3.
I told you this was happening today only, and that's all there is to it. It only disconnects you from calling when we're talking about things, although, as I've said, call anyway yesterday when I told you to call between 10 and 2 and jump in. Doesn't matter what we're talking about. Never does, really, does it?
No.
Doesn't this happen to syndicated broadcasters all the time?
A lot of shows that people listen to aren't
not listening to it in real time.
They will be live in their host city, but then when it's sent out, some of these stations will say, well, we don't want to play it at 3 in the afternoon. We'll put it on at
7.
7 at night,
yeah.
So you can't call in. You're right. And they're different all over the country.
So, but then they still, because it's been a while since I've listened to a syndicated show with calls. And so, in other words, if it aired in its home city at 3 and it airs in Chicago at midnight, they still air those phone calls, though.
Yeah, the phone calls are embedded because they're live in their host market.
Right.
And by market, I mean city. I don't know.
Talking about topics that people already know they're probably going to cover, and they're calling
right,
in
they
to talk about something that is
just
general
live
knowledge
somewhere.
Yeah.
But then if I lived in a city where it wasn't, that'd be kind of a bummer because I couldn't.
Well, that's the way it is because some of these shows are on 300 stations.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be on at the same time live everywhere. they will time shift it to accommodate their needs.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I came clean on this. I'm not trying to fool anybody. Hello? They want this one for the opening. Hello? Wait, where'd it go? Hello, Greenland and Gurnee.
Well, at least they
understand. You've already got Nuremberg and Naperville, right?
Yes, I got that ready for Tuesday.
And once again, they've picked up on the fact that you use the same letter and you use an international.
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I don't. It's not an alliteration.
No, but it seems to, the last several it seems. Uh-oh. Leslie's leaving the room.
Are you back on the other station now?
She's got old media now.
Yeah, I've got to step in and go terrestrial, but I'll be back.
All right. And this one.
This is a real shift now.
You know what else is 5 hours ahead? It's a quartermilt Greenland. That's what.
That's 5 hours
That's
ahead.
What. They're 5 hours ahead.
So right now it's live there.
Now I know. Were you surprised to see the coverage of Joan Rivers on the news?
Oh, my gosh. I mean.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my goodness.
That's what I said.
I was going to say, oh, my gosh, and oh, my goodness.
When I.
Oh, my gosh.
When I hurt myself. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. Hurt my gush. No, but I mean, I understand it's Joan Rivers, but it's Joan Rivers. It's not,
and she's not dead.
Not the king of England.
But they made it like it was a big story
on the network news. It wasn't just the local. You figure, okay. I mean, I saw Lester Holt yesterday with the picture of Joan Rivers talking about. It's like, geez,
yeah, she's not dead,
man.
Hey, happens with a lot of people. They go in for some surgery and things go south. And the other thing that caught my eye last night, maybe yours too, if you watch the Bears game, do we want a quarterback whose last name is Fails? That's all we need. I hope my name theory doesn't apply. He's trying to get the backup spot, right? Or is there?
No,
or he's trying for the third spot,
the third string, yeah,
or their practice squad,
something like that. Yeah, yeah.
Explain to me on the jerseys. I'm not familiar with what this is, and maybe you know.
Uh-huh.
On the front, they had this threading that was kind of in a V shape. It looked like they were patched or something. I didn't know.
I've never seen. I don't know if that's a new. That might be just a new detail that all teams have.
Is it representing something?
I don't know.
It really stuck out because it's uneven.
Yeah.
In some ways, there's one thread that connects in kind of a V form.
Yeah, I don't know.
I have no idea. I never saw that before, and I thought, well, maybe I missed something, or maybe is this the preseason uniform?
No, they don't really.
How about this fact? Somebody texted me this. Bears, Cubs, and Sox all lost to Ohio teams yesterday.
The Reds, the Browns.
And the Indians.
And the Indians.
Ohio.
And we make fun of Ohio. Yeah, it's hard to. There's no picture, at least in the Sun Tunley seat. I can't tell that the Browns have that on theirs too. They've got a white little V.
Well, there must be some meaning.
Yeah.
Do you know Aaron or Brian who is in the other room? Who are in the other room? If I was just talking to Brian, I would say is, but they were both collectively named. Wow. That was a kneecapper.
And you said, oh, my goosh was bad.
It's contagious. Do you know why they have that design on the uniforms? It just seems new that I.
Maybe it's just like a new little stylistic thing. Because the V does come into the NFL logo. You know what I'm saying? Is when the point of the V goes into the NFL logo. So maybe it's just a.
Okay. Know, having said all that, is it attractive? I don't think it is.
No.
It looks like a repair job on a uniform.
Yeah, it doesn't. I don't know what they're going for there.
But the last name of this guy that's trying for something is Fails.
Yeah.
That's like that politician, Dick Phelan.
Right.
Wow.
And?
Do you want to go through life with Dick Phelan?
And he lost, although he's very successful.
Yeah, but how about Richard?
Oh, okay. I thought of the Phelan. Okay, I didn't.
Yeah,
get the
but
first
still.
Part. Okay.
Why don't you just go with the formal name? Because you're going to run into this. Like Dick Johnson. How about Richard Johnson? Because you're lending yourself to the sophomoric musings of something like this show.
And does he not get that? Does Dick Johnson not get that?
Never had any other name.
I know, but you know, if you're going to be on television, don't you think of all the possibilities of before you go out there and put yourself out there? Don't you think of all the possibilities? Okay,
I would
put my name out there. Geez, if it says Dick Johnson, that doesn't sound good. Let me say Richard.
Wasn't there is it a NASCAR driver? It's Dick Trickle, right?
Oh, I think didn't you read that name?
Remember Dick Trickle, Dick Trickle.
Remember you had all those weird sports
names? I know, it's silly, but come on, you think of it when you hear it.
Well, I'm getting a little upset about there's a guy in the Cubs they just brought up, this new phenom of theirs called Solar, S-O-L-E-R, but it's pronounced Solaire. Okay, but in print, it looks like solar, S-O-L-E-R. So everybody now is using solar power, you know, the takeoff.
Because he's been doing well since he came up.
But it's not solar power. His name is Solaire. It doesn't work.
Got to get whatever you can get out of these names.
I know, but I know it looks right in print, but if you say it out loud, it's wrong. So to me, that's not clever. That's not a clever headline. Yeah. His name is Solaire. You don't say Solaire Power.
Well, I just felt bad for this Fails guy because he didn't really look good last night. No. And then you got the name Fails.
Yeah, no kidding.
And you're tying all that together.
Although, what I thought was interesting was this goes to show you. Okay, you said he didn't do well yesterday, right?
Well, am I wrong?
No. But you know what it says here? QB performs well in extended work. And I was like, where did he perform well? Was I watching a different game?
I thought I saw some kind of bad stuff. Wasn't he sacked a couple times?
Yeah, I was like, how do you say that?
And then you go to the report on the Cubs, sensational sloppiness. They weren't putting any lipstick on that pig.
No, they lost yesterday 7-2. Although, of course, Solaire Power got a base hit that brought in a couple
runs. He's the new hope.
Oh, there's a lot of new hopes.
Here's a text. I bet you've already told a story today involving cream-colored pants or Robert Plant shoes. Am I right? All right, that Robert Plant story is a perennial about the white shoes. You rolled that out on Labor Day.
Although it is true you did mention the cream color. But that was only because people texted you about your cream-colored pants.
The cream-colored pants are now top of conversation at parties, I guess.
It's top of the head. Top of the mind.
Top of the head. Okay. Richard Johnson.
When you say Gary Meyer, you think cream-colored pants now. It's synonymous.
Well, I don't know why that's so odd. Because
it's
in
not
the
odd.
Summer, I love dark as much as anybody.
I beg your pardon.
I'm one of those people who is always considered a man in black.
Right.
Oh, he's always wearing the black. And then I broke out to pastels and cream-colored pants during the summer. I felt pretty good about it. And it just seems like I've had mishaps when I've had the cream-colored pants on.
Right, so there's nothing wrong with the actual color choice. It's that you've had mishaps. I have not heard any mishaps in dark clothing.
Well, it covers it better.
Yeah. Well, that's why I always wear, people say, why are you always wearing black shirts? Especially in the summer. Why are you wearing black shirts? It's so hot. I wear the black shirts because I sweat. And if I didn't wear a black shirt, you would see the sweat marks. In the black.
Well, nobody wants to see that.
No, the black hides it. So
if I had spilled that hot chocolate on dark pants, although I stayed, I didn't.
Right.
I thought, people. Yeah. How many people really notice, as they said in Shawshank Redemption, how many times do you notice a guy's shoes? And that's how Andy Dufresne started his escape.
Right.
He had the warden's shoes on, and he had the suit underneath his prison clothes.
Right. Exactly.
But I think I look at shoes.
No, I look at shoes.
Yeah, I think shoes say a lot, don't they?
Oh, I think they do. I think I always try to keep my shoes shined or clean.
Yeah, I think people really evaluate you by your shoes a little bit.
I mean, if they're scuffed up or I do know. I mean, the other day, I don't know if you were watching the Emmys, if you watched the whole thing, did you see one of the winners, the guy? Can't remember what show he won for. He had like a tuxedo on and he had one of those very tight fitting suits now that are so cool that are short.
Right, and the tie sticks out the bottom of the jacket.
But the pants are short too.
Right.
He had no socks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, did you see him?
He had clogs or something.
Yeah, I'm like, well, come on. You know,
that's Hollywood.
When I saw that, I'll tell you though, when I saw that, I said, I am so glad I don't live out there because I would, that, I got so angry at that guy.
You wouldn't fit in at all.
Because he thought he was so cool. And I'm like, that is so not cool.
You are so not cool.
It's so not cool.
If I lived out there, I'd find you.
I would just beat that guy up. No, but he thought he was so, I mean, it's like, come on. I know that it's the hip thing, especially in L.A., not to wear socks.
I cannot not wear socks.
Especially with leather shoes.
Now, Aaron, who is the associate producer, I've known her father for many years. I don't think he's ever owned a pair of socks. Aaron, please confirm. And this guy's a runner.
He doesn't
wear socks when he runs either, does he?
No, he has never worn socks his entire life.
Not even with a business suit?
Nope.
No, it could be 10 below, no socks.
No socks.
He's Why?
Never worn a pair of
Why?
Socks. He just doesn't like them.
So even when he was a kid, he never wore socks?
You know, I've never asked him
You
that.
Should ask
There's
him. Like, when did
at
this
the
start?
Dinner table tonight.
When did this no socks thing start?
Oh, it's
as
been...
soon as I met him.
Well,
you met him
when you were born.
You were in the delivery room. But I've known him, like I said, longer than she's been around.
And so even back in the early days.
35, 40 years ago.
When he would dress formal.
Never had a pair of socks on. And like I said, he runs, and I'm thinking, that's got to scrape.
Well, no, I hear now there's a lot of guys, actually the big thing now is to run barefoot. That's kind of, they say that it's better for your foot. And there's this
How do you do that where you don't?
I don't know.
Miss that piece of glass or whatever.
And there's another thing that's actually, instead of wearing gym shoes, it almost fits right over your foot. And it's a little, it's got some protection, but it's almost like you're running barefoot. That's, you're supposed to get that sensation. It's just a rubber covering just to cover your foot. It's got little individual things for the toes. And that's supposedly the best way to run.
When I was at the beach over vacation, I had some those water shoes on or flip-flops or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was watching these people get out on the hot sand. That sand is
so hot.
It's like walking on the sun.
It's so hot.
There's no way I'm going to walk on that sand.
I know.
And I've done that before. We all have.
Okay.
Where you step out there and it is, of course, it's been in the sun all morning, early afternoon.
Well, it looks so harmless.
It looks inviting.
Yeah,
like I'll just squish my toes in the warm sand.
Oh.
And it is super hot.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
I.
Have you ever been in Vegas and on the concrete?
I've been in Vegas
when
in August. And if this texter wants me to add this story into the perennials, we, as it turned out, were in Vegas the same weekend that Muhammad Atta and that other nutball was in Vegas. I could have passed them on the street because they were
really?
In Vegas right before.
Yeah, they went to the strip clubs.
September
right?
11th.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were there because they gave the timeline of where they were in the weeks leading up to 9/11. We were in Vegas at the same time. I could have passed the guy on the street.
You probably did.
And are you saying that I should walk barefoot in Vegas?
No, no. Have you ever been by the pool in August in Vegas? You can't walk on the concrete.
No.
It is, you will literally burn your feet off. Because
yeah.
It's 150 degrees out there, as it is.
And the sun beating down on that.
And once, you know, I remember the first time I went there, I was a little kid. And, you know, here, you jump in the pool, you jump out of the pool. You don't think twice about, you know, running on the concrete. That was a... I thought it was on the sun.
That and that Ernie Banks statue at Wrigley, when I put my arm on that, was 500 degrees. I think I'll just rest here and wait for the people I'm going to meet for the game. I put my arm on that marble base, and it was really 500 degrees. Wow.
So even...
5 o'clock.
So now, in an hour, when we would typically start to talk about food, it won't be the same. We won't be as hungry right now.
Well, it is lunchtime.
That's true.
When we're taping this.
That's true. By 1:30, might be a little hungry. So it might
Maybe.
Work out well.
All right. Later in the program, I'm talking to the author Marja Mills. She wrote the book, The Mockingbird Next Door. She moved in next door to Harper Lee for a couple of years in Alabama to write the book that explores the comings and goings of Harper and her sister. They live together. And I Yeah, another. I looked this up. Neither of them ever married.
No.
And the sister, her sister Alice, is 102 years old and practiced law till she was 100. And Harper is 88, I believe, and in a nursing home. She had a stroke a few years ago. But there's been some controversy about the book in that Harper, in the last few years, when the book came out this summer, she released a statement and said, I didn't cooperate with this woman. Anything she says is a lie. Alice, I believe, was a little more agreeable to saying, yeah, we hung out, and right, it's okay.
Well, Harper Lee has been very...
She had a stroke 7 years ago.
Right, but I mean, she's but over the last 40 or 50 years, she has been basically a recluse. Hasn't spoken, hasn't done an interview.
Is it a recluse or recluse?
Recluse. I always heard recluse, but maybe it's recluse. But has just known, almost like J.D. Salinger, has become this hermit.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, you don't want anything to do with anybody, and that's when people are more interested and want to get in your grill.
Yeah.
Same with J.D. Salinger. There's always somebody trying to get in his driveway.
Right.
His driveway in New Hampshire, I believe, was underground. Oh. He had an underground driveway to get to his house because he was tired of these people.
Yeah, no one's like living next door to John Grisham.
We don't know that, do we?
But
maybe the book's coming out.
But I'm just saying he's fine. He's out and about.
Well, because...
And nobody's bothering him.
Right. He's very prolific.
Yeah.
And but these people that want to be left alone, they're the ones that everybody wants to go after.
Everybody's looking for Greta Garbo and everything.
Greta Garbo. Wow. There's a stretch. Tuesday, around 4 o'clock, Dan Fedor will be here with his friend from Verizon. And that friend from Verizon will bring a phone to give away. Some FM transmitters, those cords that plug into your smartphone and then into your cigarette lighter receptacle in your car. And then you can pull up this program on any of your FM stations through your car speakers.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Bing, bang, boom, that way. And some Gear Force branded fly grips. These attach to the back of your phone so it's easier to hold your phone when you're talking. Or you can prop it up like a little picture with that little fly grip. That's Tuesday around 4 o'clock.
Interested to see what brand they put on for your logo.
I don't really have a logo, so but if there's Gear Force on there, good enough.
Yeah.
It takes care of everything.
Very cool. You haven't come up with a new item, right?
No, that's what I'm talking to David Hochberg about right now.
Your fall line.
Because he's the financier. And Rick Dano from Midwest Promotion Group is the guy that makes all that stuff that we have given away in the past. But there's nothing, and I've had suggestions, which I will take into consideration from listeners. Some people suggested sunglasses and...
But that's kind of...
And incense, Gary Meyer incense.
That would be funny.
So we'll see. Somebody claimed yesterday that I sound like this because I was inhaling all that incense for 2 weeks before they put the kibosh on it.
Maybe they did you a favor.
Yeah, maybe they did.
That would be... I bet you there's, because didn't you say that someone just sent you a pack of seven different
two
aromas?
Packs of incense, yes, with 49 cones in each package.
So they make those then in that kind of a bulk thing. I bet you you might be able to find that would be very unique, because these always have to be kind of unique.
Yeah, they're one-off things that you wouldn't think of. But I'll tell you what, with the winter we had, that muff came in pretty handy.
Oh yeah. And it started off as just kind of a little joke, just because of the way the word was kind of funny.
Well, it was because Tom Skilling didn't have a follow-up to his
Snuggie,
and I said, wouldn't people love a Tom Skilling muff?
Right.
And then David Hochberg said, that's the item.
Yeah.
Happiness is a Warm Muff was on the muff itself. And how many times did you have your hands on that muff over that winter?
Or wanted to.
When you saw one. Hopefully, we won't have that bad of a winter, but there's nothing to predict at this point. Tom Skilling has been off this week. Jim Ramsey, because I had to tape early, said he'll try to jump on after 1 o'clock. I didn't write any script for him today. I guess it's a free day. I think he's covered everything pretty well. In fact, we can play one of his older scripts. Aaron, if you want to pull one up, I'll be happy to share that with everybody. They're all good.
I mean,
this guy sells the city like anybody else, and I will pay him a compliment. When I read the script that I wrote for him yesterday, and then I did it because I thought, well, I'll try this voice.
Right.
And I got some text that said, hey, leave it to the professional, Mr. Ramsey.
And
that's quite a compliment.
And what's funny about that is that you wrote it.
So you would know where the moments are,
right, but he's,
what to punch.
He's put his own style on these things now, and people won't accept anybody else.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you're like Burt Bacharach.
I am exactly
you
like
You can
that.
Write things, but you need your Dionne Warwick.
Yes, I do. I'm trying to think of other voices that were changed that didn't work. I know when the people who do the voices for The Simpsons were holding out for more money, there was this threat, as they always do, we'll just hire other people to do the voices, but those voices are the characters.
Well, there's one.
And just to find, and I'm sure there are people that can do them, but they're making a fortune on these shows, and they don't want to give a little bit, as Supertramp said, to the people that were there from the beginning.
And it's 25 years they've been making that money. It's not
like still making it.
That's what I mean. It's still going on. It's just they just renewed it again. Well, one bad voice that really is difficult for me to listen to is the new Kermit. It is not good.
New Kermit.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jim Henson died.
Yeah, but that's been.
But ever been since, but 20 ever
years ago, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, but ever. Well, I don't care how long it's been. When he died, whoever they've gotten to do Kermit is not good. And I know they've made movies and they've done things, but it is not.
Okay,
Kermit.
There's an example.
It is. And I think that the guy, somebody who, I think the guy that did Scooby-Doo died. But how, I mean, that's got to be pretty easy. Although, like, remember Mel Blanc died? And he tried to have his son, and it didn't work. He tried to teach his son how to do
that. Now, there's a great example of your Bugs Bunny, your Yosemite Sam, all those great
Sylvester,
characters.
Oh, yeah.
You might find somebody that gets close, but not the original.
No.
And it really does make a difference when you see these things after you've seen them for a long time.
Yeah.
If it doesn't fit, it just is wrong.
And he tried to teach his son because he knew what a great gig this was. And his son didn't. And I think they pacified Mel while he was still alive to like, oh, well, we'll consider him. But once Mel died, the son never got the job.
No, it wasn't there.
No. And there's been other people that I think that have done that, you know, they've obviously done different things for Warner Brothers with those voices. But Mel Blanc, they sound like imitations.
And let me start into some other stories because we've managed to, for 2 hours plus. I don't think we burned through anything, did we?
No, I mean, like you said,
I was in this conversation.
We're just burning through conversations here.
Leslie, and then George called about softball and the museum.
And drugs.
And he wants this guy called George. He's been on the show before. And he said, legalize all of them.
Oh, my God.
Let God sort it out. Crack.
It was good.
Meth. Molly.
It was getting a little NPR-ish toward the end.
Well, that's why I put the end on it right there. And I've seen this.
All things considered.
Video of a guy smoking a French fry. It says here, Trevor Farrell has finally proven that McDonald's is actually serving up drugs. I don't know how he's proven that, but it's on Facebook. Shows Farrell lighting the tip of what we're made to think is a potato product and inhaling smoke from the other side. Farrell says he was inspired by others who claimed to have smoked French fries and simply wanted to test their validity. He isn't the first to record himself in the act.
So he's actually
5 years ago, a group of friends unsuccessfully attempting to smoke a French fry was on YouTube.
And this guy has?
And he did light it up, and it does look like he's lighting up a doob.
Oh.
But I don't know what that would taste like. Are people getting high off French fries by smoking French fries?
I hope not, because that's all we need.
Why do you care?
Well,
you don't care.
I do care.
You're of the mindset we need to bleach the gene pool.
Well, it's true.
Yeah,
but
time to get some of that sorted out. We have to cull the herd.
I understand that, but I mean, at the same time, I don't want to have a bunch of drug addicts who can just go to McDonald's and buy a supersize me.
And just have a party or
yeah.
smoking French fries.
Yeah, I mean.
Leslie, what do you know about smoking French fries on the street? What have you heard? You've heard
smoking
about.
Smoking French fries?
You've not heard about this story where
no.
a guy put the video on YouTube, he's smoking a French fry from McDonald's.
So we're talking about smoking in terms of putting it in your mouth
right.
and
lighting
inhaling?
Totally. Yeah.
As opposed to
you haven't seen the video?
Smoked fish and smoked
French
fries?
See all this stuff.
Yeah, no, smoking French fries.
Well, now she told me earlier about the video craze where people are tying balloons to dead animals.
That's great.
And what is on the balloon?
Get well.
Get well. some roadkill.
So if you see a raccoon or a deer. Like a possum or something like that.
That possum on Cicero by the exit to 55, that possum was there about a week.
Ooh. And was he all bloated then?
He was chubby.
Yeah.
Of course, it was summer.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Not of course. It was summer.
Yeah,
and that won't help. And he was on his back. And then I think somebody said somebody did put a sign in his little paw, welcome to Chicago.
Oh, that's great.
And about 10 minutes later, the city finally went and got it.
I'm watching the smoking the French fry video.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot to get it lit, it turns out.
I mean, is he really inhaling? Or is he just kind of
He is putting it in it. He bites off he lights one end, bites off the other end, takes a good long drag on it, and then blows out smoke.
But isn't the potato just burning?
Yeah.
Well, there's smoke coming out. Maybe that's what I do in my office now. Is that verboten too? French fry smoking?
It might not smell.
I think the fact you're setting it on fire is the problem.
Yeah, as soon as you light something up. Yeah.
I think somebody's sending me the incense spray.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I want to see
that. Exist?
That's what they said.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And now, according to the memo, there is nothing in that would be a problem.
No, that's not against the lease.
It won't break Section 4, paragraph D?
The Tribune lease? I don't think so.
The Tribune fire police come?
Do you really believe that the security...
Actually, that is true. There are buildings that have, and probably most of them, these rules about... Well, think about it. If you have people lighting candles in their little cubicle and there's all this paper and stuff.
No, but do you think that the security people really?
Oh, that's what Stephanie said. She said, because I confronted her in a joking manner. I said, well, thanks.
And then she cried.
And then I gave her a candy bar and she was crying. And she claims the security people in the lobby complained.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Although, as I said many times over the last several weeks, you could smell it as soon as you got out of the... So I'm sure they were smelling it.
Have you smelled some of the things in that lobby? Your incense
was the least
of the culprits.
There's an Argo tea right next to the lobby, and there's a door that opens into the lobby. So what would be anything they could smell besides what they're cooking up?
Yeah. And the restaurant, then, is down in the other hallway.
I'm
that's
sure
right next
that
to
some
it.
Of that smell. Yeah. Howls and Hood.
Right.
That's got a waft back in there.
Yeah,
I feel bad for the security guard who has to sit on the loading dock because there is some sort of vent that comes directly from Howls and Hood, and it smells so awesome in his booth. And I would just imagine that this guy's got to be hungry from the minute he sits down at work to the moment he leaves.
Yeah, it's in my old office where they put the drink station, the soft drink station. Because I had
old office.
Old. Yeah, that's right. I got two
because
more
you got
offices.
Another old office that
my original office is now part of that restaurant, and I knew exactly where the space is because it was in the corner. And I went back there after the restaurant opened to see what they did. It has that pop machine where you can push the lever and it just fills your
a dispenser.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So how could you tell where the office
is? Is it the Gary Meyer Memorial Dispenser?
Yeah,
they
is.
Should put your name.
How could I tell?
Yeah, how could
the
you
corner
tell?
Of the building is always going to be the corner of the building.
So you went
it was
where
easy
those,
to see.
The
where the windows
the
were?
Hmm?
Is that so you went where the windows were then, right?
It's whether the corner of the building. That's the corner.
I would have got turned around if I got in there, wouldn't you?
How do you not find a corner of a building?
Yeah, but when...
You got four corners.
Okay, I'm just thinking about where that was, that opening.
It's in the
there's
back
all those
corner.
Hallways. And
yeah, but it's easy to find because when you get back in there, it's all open. And right there, corner, that was where the desk was.
Okay.
90-degree.
Yeah.
Right there.
Corner.
So you went right, you walked right to
right
it.
Right to it. Look at me, look right at it.
I wouldn't.
The corner of the building.
I'd have to.
Yeah, well, you.
I'm trying to think.
It's harder to find the former location of Traffic Central because it was
mid-building. You mean
mid
that little booth?
Building.
Traffic Central.
Shut up.
They should have had little plaques because
right.
It was an iconic radio station in its day.
And they do play up the connection to Chicago and the fact
right, Howls and Hood, those are the architects of the Tribune Tower.
Yeah.
And they had this massive studio right in the middle of where the booths are.
Yeah.
How about a little plaque? And this is the area where they're...
Yeah.
WGN's original studio was their big studio.
So
I don't know if anybody cares, but I thought it's
well,
interesting.
That's why
right?
they had to do the Walk of Fame, no doubt, because the rest of it wasn't memorialized
that's
enough.
Right.
Have they mentioned when you're getting
what's
your,
that?
Have you gotten your brick yet?
My brick? I got my brick.
Oh,
all right.
Yeah.
What's your timetable now? Because you were not here at the top of the hour.
I got to be elsewhere around the top and bottom of the hour.
Okay,
but
so you want to do
I'm
yourself
good on the quarters the and
quarters.
Whenever you want.
The quarters.
All right. Gary Meyer on the Gear Force, the Streamliner. Residents of a Louisiana parish have been warned that there's an unwelcome visitor in their water supply. Routine samples taken from St. John the Baptist Parish's water district, which provides water to more than 12,000 people, tested positive for Nagliera fowleri. Wasn't he an Amadeus? A brain-eating amoeba that usually travels through the nose and into the brain, where it can cause a devastating infection that is usually fatal. But get this point. Families can take simple steps to protect themselves from exposure to this amoeba, the most important being to avoid allowing water to go up your nose while bathing or swimming in a pool.
That's
like saying,
how do you even do that?
It's in your saliva, so just don't swallow. When you're swimming, that's the whole thing, unless you're wearing, and how many people wear nose clips?
Oh, that bad. Oh, you can't.
Some people
wear.
Do.
And even when you wore the nose clips, was, you would still get water
right.
in your nose.
Yeah. But I don't know about you in the shower, but it's going to get in there.
It's an orifice. It has to get
it's
in.
Open. It's ready for business.
It's open. Yeah, I mean, you can't close it.
So, yeah, thank you for helping us on that one. Louisiana has a lot of these petrochemical plants.
Oh, yeah.
And I would imagine that that stuff is in the groundwater and in the water everywhere.
Well, when you see the aerial views of New Orleans, and there's just kind of a murk
right.
along the coastline, you know it's not good.
Yeah, that BP spill, who would notice on their coastline?
Yeah.
But they got money from BP. You know this Burning Man event?
Mm-hmm.
You've heard
of
this?
Definitely. It's basically just a big place for hippies and ne'er-do-wells to hang out.
Ne'er-do-wells?
For a week. Yeah, pretty much. They pretty much said it's become...
You go there and smoke some French fries listen to some music.
It has in touch with yourself.
It did start out as kind of a cultural cool thing, but they say now
corporations are taking over and setting up these elaborate tents like that always happens.
And just a
say
of
gangs,
every Hollywood promoter is sending every young ingenue and cute young actor there to be photographed looking like they're relatable and super.
But for over the long term, there's a lot of drug dealers and ne'er-do-wells that are just hanging out there. It's become a cool place to hang. You're like biker clubs.
It follows these other things that were meant to be kind of manageable and quaint, the Sundance Film Festival.
Right.
And now it's just a place to be seen and hang.
Yeah.
And corporations are just sponsoring everything. Man, taking over.
Well, they had problems earlier in the week because there were some torrential rains that they hadn't planned on.
Didn't you call it smoldering, man?
Yeah. I'm thinking it's going to be hard to light that thing. But
well, the reason I'm even mentioning this is because Alice Louise Sopiccio from Wyoming has been identified as the woman who died at Burning Man yesterday. She fell under a large vehicle.
Hmm.
Oof. People!
It's Burning Man, not Burning Women. It's just men. Wasn't it originally just men, too? Was that why they called it Burning Man?
No,
no, they build a...
No, you're thinking of one of those... What was that group where the guys would all get together?
The Promise Keepers.
Promise Keepers, and bang drums and get in touch with their manliness.
Their,
and be
with
better
sons.
And be better fathers. Yeah. No, Burning Man is they build a huge wooden stick figure kind of thing, and then they burn them up at the end. But for like a week, it's this kind of commune where everybody's supposed to just
you
find
can do some hallucinogens not do much other than wander off in the desert and die.
But I heard there's a little dark edge to it now that it's getting a little
festival
a little rapey.
Yeah.
The festival is expected to have 68,000 people this year, along with 500 private security personnel and 95 federal and local law enforcement officers.
Oh, my God. It's like a police state.
It's going to be really hard to ride your bicycle or your Segway around that.
This is not the first death at Burning Man. That was 11 years ago when Catherine Lampman was run over by an art car after jumping from it to get a better view of a landmark. In 07, a man reportedly committed suicide after jumping from the rafters of a public tent. And at least two other people have died since the hospital began treating Burning Man attendees 3 years ago.
It's somewhere, like, way out.
Oh, it is
yeah.
In the middle of the Nevada desert.
Yeah, it's like way, way out. This is not something that you just happen upon.
Safety precautions at Burning Man include wearing headlamps, glow sticks, and other forms of light at night. Motorists must also abide by the 5 mph speed limit. Burning Man tickets include the warning, you voluntarily assume the risk of death. All right.
Wow.
All right. That's
right on the right on the ticket.
Let's see. Hallucinogens.
Yeah, this is.
And driving don't seem like yeah. they're going to be a good combo.
In the middle of the desert when it's black as pitch at night.
Yeah.
And I can't remember. There's the guy that started this is kind of a counterculture. I can't remember who he is or what his deal was, but it started out as this very, you know, in touch hippie thing, and now it's turned into this, like you were saying.
Right. Corporations set up these.
Yeah.
Massive tents.
Well, the Sundance Film Festival has been around for many, many years. It was only the last 15 or so where suddenly it got this weird hipness, and now it's become, it's nothing like it used to be.
No.
But that's been going on for a long time.
Yeah, because people want to be with the hip crowd,
yeah.
And you just look at what's on the list of hipness.
I don't think anybody even goes to see movies there. They just, I think all the California... hipsters like to go to Utah and buy a winter coat for the first time.
Exactly.
Isn't this awesome? We get to wear a parka? I've never done this before.
And, of course, it wouldn't use animal fur around the collar there.
I've never been organic. To that part of Utah. I have been to Utah. It is really beautiful.
Gorgeous.
And that's all you got to do is drive away from that, and you'll still be in a beautiful part of the country.
I hear that Park City is not that far from Salt Lake City, though. It's not that far of a drive. But if there's mountains there, I'm not driving it.
Yeah, here we go. Because there are young toughs that
aren't
populate
you,
these mountains.
Can you drive in the mountains?
It's not my favorite thing, but yeah, I have.
I have, but I can't.
Do you white knuckle it the whole time?
Oh,
my God!
I told you. Where were we at? We were in Carmel, and I wanted to go to San Simeon, which is Hearst Castle, and it's right on
Highway 1.
Highway 1. And so I saw the route, and I saw how close this thing was at some points. It's right on the...
That's why it's Highway 1.
Yeah, right on the Pacific Coast.
Beautiful drive.
Well, yeah, if you're in the passenger seat, not if you're driving.
Don't let your wife drive.
I couldn't trust that.
That's great.
So that's I actually drove in 45 minutes inland to find an interstate that went north so that I could go and then cut over because I did not want to drive down.
But it's all paved. It's not like driving
right next to it.
The weird thing was
driving to the
peak of Pike's Peak and finding out that there is no paved road, or at least there wasn't when I was a little kid, halfway up. That was scary. But everything there is paved.
But you're right on the edge.
Have you seen those videos from around the world where they have these roads that are carved on the side of a mountain? And you think this is a joke, that somebody's made this up somehow.
That are some, Mongolian kids walking on the side of a cliff in order to go to school every day.
Nothing. It's about 10,000 feet down, and they're just curving around there. The scariest drive on that list would be the Amalfi Coast.
In Italy, yeah.
When we went to Italy.
That is.
And we were not driving, but I thought, that's 2,000 feet down at least, I think. And it is right at the edge like you don't like.
Yes.
But there are buses coming the other way. It's a two-lane highway.
What were you in? What were you in?
We had a car pick us up because we didn't know.
I was in the bus. And the
you were in that bus.
Yeah, the bus.
That bus.
Everybody in the bus was screaming like a horror movie because they're making these. At some points, they make the turn, and the front of the bus is over the cliff.
Yeah,
and people are going.
Yeah, that to me was a little tightness of the pencil sharpener.
I'll have to look on. I just saw online there was somebody that I just saw today. I'll find it. There was some road in India. And some guy was on a bus, and he put his camera out the window to show how the bus was literally right on the edge of a mountain.
Yeah, and these people, and by these people, I mean those people that have those roads carved along the side of a mountain. That's what they do every day. There's a ton of videos that show these. Not just driving, there are walkways carved like that. And it's maybe 6 inches wide, and they're crawling along. And you got to jump sometimes from one pad to another.
So have you driven on the Highway 1?
Yes. I took that drive. Yeah,
and you could do that?
Yeah. Because I wanted to. Well, it is hard when you're driving. You can't get all the feel of the scenery.
But you're not weird about it. Like, it doesn't. You don't white knuckle around there?
Yeah. I don't remember that happening.
I was. And then the joke was on me, of course, because I drove 45 minutes in. I found this interstate. I drive there, and it took me back to Highway 1. Because San Simeon is on high. It's right on there.
Yeah.
But thankfully, it was on a stretch where the road was inland a little more, as opposed to being right on the cusp of the shore. Because there's some parts there where it's just rocks and water spraying up on you.
Yep.
Can't
That's
do that.
The beauty of the drive.
Yeah, but not if you're driving. How could that be beautiful? It's scary.
Okay. Well, I think you've exposed just about all of your weaknesses today.
I would love to.
Afraid of young toughs on the blue line.
I would love to.
Guys in motorized wheelchairs.
I mean, I would love to be in the car and watch it. Then I would do it, but not to drive it. We're from here. We drive on flat land.
That is a little jarring. Yeah, if you've lived in the Midwest your whole life.
Yeah.
When I first drove out to California, I was expecting mountains as soon as I got to Colorado, but the mountains, when you get out of Nebraska into Colorado, they don't start until you get to Denver, which is a good drive from the edge of Colorado there. The Rocky Mountains don't kick in right away. And I was thinking, this is my first time seeing mountains. Where are the mountains?
Where are the mountains?
So I'm driving. And
then
when you get to Denver.
There's some major mountains.
Yeah. Drove through all that.
Because that's a scare. I've driven the drive from Denver to Vail, and I did that one time, and that was the last time. I did that one time, and I had to pull over at one point because I was physically drained. I was physically tired, and I was
your hands tend to fuse to the steering wheel,
and then there's these trucks that are flying by, and then of course when I was there it had to start raining and hailing.
We had a scary drive through Central California at night. Dense fog.
Oh.
And two-lane road, and that was frightening.
Yeah.
And it just blew up. It was one of those things, you're in a valley, and it comes in for maybe a couple miles, and then you're out of it, but...
You've been to Carmel, right?
Oh, yeah.
Have you driven to Carmel at night?
I don't know if I drove at night, but I was there.
Fog there is horrendous. If you go by Monterey, which is right near Carmel, you drive there at night. Oh! You can't even see... You can't see a foot in front of you.
If I could take a live text, I'm sure it would read something like this. Driving through Carmel at night, way to relate to your audience. I'm getting, even though, again, just so you know, there's no sleight of hand here. The show is being taped from 10 to 2.
Okay, Penn.
And I'm still getting texts flowing in because people are asking me, what are you talking about? And a lot of them are referencing the fact that I do not have the right to wear cream-colored pants after Monday.
They're still bringing
you
that up.
You better start wearing dark pants by Tuesday.
Wow, who knows? Who knew you were hitting a little...
Man, those cream-colored pants really hit a nerve.
It's trending. There's Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie wedding, Gary Meyer cream-colored pants.
Those are the trending
topics.
Those
are the two trending topics.
And Joan Rivers.
And Joan Rivers. You've actually topped Joan Rivers on Yahoo.
I wonder... Not that it's a big deal. She is in the shape she's in, one way or another. But at first, when they reported that story, it was almost like she was dead. Of course, that was Drudge. He likes to make everything look like gloom.
Gloom and doom.
That's the medication. It's speaking to you.
Yeah, well, they did make it sound very dire, though, initially. I mean, she stopped breathing.
That'll do it.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder what kind of shape she's in, because if you stop breathing for a certain amount of time, I mean, that
can't be good.
Yeah, you're going to have a little brain damage.
When will she be back on the red carpet, or will she redline?
When is she going to be on Fashion Police?
That's our concern right now.
Oh, grow up!
Having the vocal cords worked on. That's what they claim at a clinic.
Yeah, a little lift of the vocal cords. But, I mean, I had to, you know, it's kind of an interesting term. Leslie read the story, and she said that Joan is in a self-induced coma, medical coma. She's resting comfortably.
Well, how can you not?
You rest in a coma?
Coma's your best rest.
Yeah, I mean, that's
got to
be
your best nap ever.
The best sleep you got.
So. You can't enjoy that, then.
But usually that's not a good sign when they put you in that.
There's... Well, they have done that for burn victims and other things that happen to that severity, and then they get out of it.
Yeah,
and they can.
I'm just wondering if, you know, depending on how long the lack of oxygen to the brain, that could do some major brain damage.
But you're criticizing Jennifer Lawrence's clothing. I don't know. How much brain power do you need? Right? I think she'll be able to recoup.
Come on, she left the house in that.
Oh, grow up.
Grow up.
I wonder if she'll have that acerbic tone after being near death.
Well, I am already, you all, if you know already, the Inquirer is trying to find out what this procedure was, because they're saying it was on her vocal cords. I don't think anybody believes that. So you know that the editors at the Inquirer have already gotten to the...
But even if it is cosmetic surgery, so what? Is she going to be ostracized because she's had cosmetic surgery?
No, but it would be sad, because here's an 81-year-old woman who we already know has certainly admitted to getting surgery.
Yeah, why wouldn't you admit it now?
But
who cares?
But it's okay. So you had to keep, you're 81. You had to keep doing this, and now it led to your death or this severe thing. Why couldn't you just let it go? Isn't there a certain point where you stop? I guess.
And who is she trying to impress at 81?
Yeah. I mean,
that face is all pulled tight now.
Yeah. So one,
has she gotten a man out of this?
I don't think so.
I don't think her daughter's got a man, does she?
Well, not since she got divorced. She
That's
was
what
married.
I mean.
No, I don't think so.
So if the daughter's batting zero,
what's mama going to do? Well, and then, of course, Melissa's sitting there going, oh, no, where's my career? Mom, hold on. Put her in a coma. Let her live for 5 more years so I can at least get a career out of this.
Put her in a coma.
Well, because she produces that show.
Melissa does.
Yeah, so I got to think that without Joan, Melissa loses that job, because anybody could produce that show. Kelly Osbourne is just going to take over. And
that one guy, oh, that's awful. How does she leave the house like that?
Yeah, I mean, this is not brain surgery here, so I bet you Melissa loses that job.
Yeah, I mean, Joan was the figurehead of that.
Right.
Trash the red carpet attendees at any cost.
Yeah.
And I don't know, Melissa never got her stripes doing that.
Yeah.
And this story out of New Jersey, on her Twitter feed, a Newark Memorial High School teacher described in explicit terms her desires for her students. She wanted to pour coffee on them. She wanted to stab them.
This is a teacher?
A teacher. Some of them, she said, make my trigger finger itchy.
Oh, boy.
Whoa.
What could go wrong?
I already want to stab some kids. Is that bad? 19 more days.
Could you imagine the homework she must give?
You know, but it's amazing. We had a discussion with an associate, like a family friend, who was posting stuff like that about her job on Facebook, and just said, you know, you might want to dial this back a little bit, because you kind of are making death threats against your coworkers. Somebody might take...
And here we keep seeing people doing this. It says on one of these tweets, so happy to be done with school for 10 days, but especially be away from the ones who truly try my patience and make my trigger finger itchy.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man.
You all think you can hate us teachers? Guess what? We feel the same way about some of you.
Oh.
We're just not allowed to show it. Hashtag, I secretly hate you.
Oh! Well, so much for the subtle reference.
I don't think secretly at all.
And the y'all throws it, gives you a sense of where she's from.
You know what sucks the most about teaching summer school? The kids I can't stand, who failed, will be in that class. Hashtag, summer ruined.
Oh, my God. Well, hey, no one told you to become a teacher.
I don't imagine Fred Rogers ever harbored these sort of feelings.
Well, I know some people that are teachers, And they don't use their name as their Facebook name. They use like their first name and their middle name as their name. They don't use their last name.
I could see that.
So that the kids won't be able to go on and read that. But
the problem with teaching summer school is I'm going to get all the expletive who failed my class, two of whom I wish would get hit by a car.
Oh.
I'm getting Starbucks for sure before school tomorrow. That way I'll be refreshed and have something to dump on the little a-holes.
I don't think she got nominated for the Golden Apple.
And let's see.
I'm betting her class probably isn't the most fun one either.
Yeah, I don't want to go on a field trip with her.
The superintendent confirmed that there was an investigation into the messages. He would not detail the discipline.
And the superintendent said, heck with the little a-holes.
Yeah, I agree. Kids are really irritating.
I bet you she's one of those teachers who would have to go check on something in the office and come back smelling like cigarettes.
I know.
Listen to this. In an email, Hodges, which is this woman's name, the teacher, said she deeply regrets the messages and continued, I never expected anyone would take me seriously. If I had thought for one moment that someone would read anything I said on Twitter and take me seriously, you'd better believe I would have been much more careful with what I've said. What then, rock did you crawl on?
Then why
under?
Are you writing it?
Hey, educator lady.
When people go online, it doesn't feel like the real world.
She said that?
That's from a professor.
Oh, okay.
Cyber psychology at Rider University in New Jersey.
That's not a real.
It's almost an extension of their imagination.
Oh, okay.
Where they can say almost anything they want. No, you can't. No. We've seen this happen many times.
Yeah, I love how they're justifying this. Don't justify this. Don't give these people an out. Nobody does anything wrong. Once again,
that kid who was suspended because he wrote in a paper at school that he wanted to kill the neighbor's dinosaur or shoot it with a gun.
Oh, shoot a dinosaur.
Yeah, and he got suspended.
Yeah. And this teacher doesn't.
And they claim it's because when they confronted him, he got a little testy. But there are no dinosaurs. It was just kind of his imagination. But this is crazy.
No, when you're talking about I'm a teacher and I got a – this is real.
Especially now. I mean – everything you do with school is done through social networking. Most teachers and their kids set up that sort of an arrangement from the very beginning so you can post assignments and the parents can check on their kids' progress and all that. So you know that you're very responsible for what you're putting out there.
Do kids now, like, does your daughter have an iPad in class?
Yeah. They went to electronic.
Yeah.
About a year ago already.
So now what's the deal? So they don't even take notes, really, like with pencil and paper?
She, I think, still does that.
Oh, okay.
But they're going totally electronic.
I assume now you probably turn in your homework via email or your assignments.
A lot of it is, online.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I always would think about going back to school. I don't think it would be difficult. It would be more difficult to get back in, not to the swing of school, but get back into the way school is done now with all this high-tech stuff.
Well,
before, you'd have to say, geez,
if you're growing up with it, this is just a natural extension.
No, but I'm talking about our age going back where we were used to
having... going back to school. Well, what are you, Rodney Dangerfield? Hey, what the heck?
I can imagine there are teachers out there going, yeah, please don't go back to school.
Which reminds me, Back to School is the movie, Aaron. There is a passage that Sam Kinison has that is precious.
Classic.
Where he's teaching a class.
Is he right?
And he unloads on the student, if you could find that, and I'll play that.
Yeah. Is he right?
Well.
Because I know that's what they said.
That's what they said. It's Joe.
Oh, yeah, Gare. Boy, you screwed my schedule up this morning.
How did I do that?
Well, my mornings, I don't really listen to anything. I do all my chores and stuff, things that
You're still not listening to anything.
We're not even
on the air yet.
No. Brian called me already this morning, told me.
Brian is the guy who set her up with the way to listen to the program.
Well, yes, I didn't listen at all. Something went wrong with the phone or somehow.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, all I got was nothing.
What's on in the background? Because I know it's not my show right now.
Well, I think That might be part of my gun smoke.
And that's not the TV show. She just got done shooting.
Exactly. She just fires into the cabinets. Part of my gun smoke.
Yeah, you're going to be in this time all the time, though, are you?
She loves Hoss.
Yeah, huh? Little Joe.
Little Joe.
No, that's not Gunsmoke.
Oh, Gunsmoke is Matt Dillon.
Right. Right. Got it.
Well, I listen to his reruns because then I could get things done because I've seen so many. I don't care if I miss a part.
No, okay. No, I'm just taping today because I'm getting out of town a little early. Got to get over to my A-frame in Saugatuck. But
Oh, you're leaving out of town today?
Yeah. This will be airing at its regular time, and if you're listening to it right now, you're thinking, what are you talking
what are you
about?
Talking about this on?
Right. It's 5:47. What's your problem? No, we're taping early. It's replaying 3 to 7, so your life should be somewhat complete by the end of the day.
Well, that's good to hear, because I still want to turn you on. 3 o'clock is my relaxed time.
Oh.
Red or white?
Right, that's when I get there. I was gone a while anyway, so... Because I went to Walgreens and I went to the bank and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so my morning was gone, making lunch and all that. So I didn't really have time to sit.
All right. Well, you didn't have to, unless you wanted to watch some Gunsmoke.
No, I just wanted to relax.
All right. Well, you got all your chores done.
No, not really. There's a few other things I still have to do.
Like what?
Well, a lot of things. Straighten up a little bit is nice,
yeah.
too.
Check the still.
My cleaning girl didn't come yesterday.
She didn't.
Now, my whole week has been a disaster.
Yeah?
And usually at this time I make phone calls to the state, to Medicare, to Medicaid. They don't answer phones. They just shovel you around to another phone that's not going to answer anyway. So, you know.
Damn government.
Yeah.
And here, I had a Joe moment, I guess, this morning. I do this thing where... Can you turn Gunsmoke down a little bit?
You know the best is, so when this airs at 5, Gunsmoke from 1 will be on the radio.
So that was your show now. No, mine is turned down.
You're listening to a podcast.
No, I'm listening to that speaker.
Yeah, but what is coming out of it?
Nothing now, because I got it off.
All right, you turned it off. All right.
Who's on first?
So, I can still hear something. All right, I'm going to plow on right here. So,
you still hear something?
There's somebody talking.
Oh, yeah, you can hear me, can't you?
No, there's somebody talking in the background.
We're not over here.
All right.
I'm alone.
But there's
a voice in the background. It sounds like it's on television or something.
Well, nobody's around here.
Wow. You're on the white, aren't you?
Huh?
You're on the white.
No, I'm on Sweet Tea.
Did Joan Rivers die?
Uh-oh.
No, she didn't die.
Well, I'm getting some text.
Oh, maybe she did in the meantime. This morning she was okay. She said she was released from the hospital and everything.
Oh, yeah?
This morning early, though.
This is from George Bliss, and he usually doesn't just... Or maybe he's speculating. Anyway, so you're talking about crazy moments?
Yeah.
When the Downy is getting down to the end, I transfer what's left if I'm taking the recycling out into another one so I can empty that bottle out because they're pretty bulky to throw in the recycling can. So there's nobody home this morning, so I'm Starkers, and I go into the laundry room... And I pour the one bottle into the other.
Right.
And as I'm getting ready to put the cap on, you know, on a washer that the lid is slanted a little bit, so the thing slid down the full one and splashed near little Joey.
Well, little Downy? Little Downy?
Little Downy when I saw that. And that's why you don't want to...
This happened to me all the time.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. One day I just opened a bottle of Advil to take to Advil, and they went all over the floor.
All right, Rain Woman, I'm not talking about a pill where that's not going to... Downy near your naughty parts.
Yeah, that's bleach.
Yeah, I know.
It's some kind of...
It's a fabric softener, yeah. But that I was lucky I didn't do any...
Why you have no pants?
I'm sure...
You just don't throw on a pair of shorts just for the hell of it?
I was running around, and I thought, I'm going to do a few things, and then I'll...
But when you're home alone.
Oh, I know.
I mean, really.
You can't throw a pair of shorts on?
I was. That was my next step, but I didn't get to it.
First step.
First, Joe, you know about this. You're at home alone, and
yep.
You know,
as
you
long as
little...
you're not frying perch, it'll be okay.
Exactly. But don't go into the laundry room, Starkers. There's too much chemical stuff around.
Oh, I know that. That part I know.
All right. Well, I will now not do that.
I want to get that on your pods.
You know, and also if you ever use bleach, get the one that is splash free. It won't splash up at you when you put the bleach on.
Yeah. I'm not going to go in there without pants anymore. I'll tell you that.
Well, I wouldn't either.
I know that now.
Although I live in an apartment building, there's too many people walking around.
Yeah. People tell me with this little throat thing I'm having that I sound like you.
When you laugh.
Yeah.
You sound like me, huh?
Yeah, I sound like you.
And I'm not even drinking.
Right. Right.
Yet.
Well, when do you start?
Yet.
You know, that's when I have my glass of wine is when I turn you on at 3 o'clock.
Oh, okay, 3 o'clock. Yeah, you can't break that schedule.
Nope.
All right, Joe, have a great Labor Day.
Hey, you too. Have a nice trip.
Thank you.
I hope the weather's better where you're going than we're going to have here.
Well.
This weather, I don't like this weather at all this summer.
I know, but.
This has to be one of the worst.
Well, it wasn't as
bad.
I've seen worse.
What's so bad about it?
We've seen worse. Thanks, Joe. There she goes.
It's not that. It hasn't been that hot. It's been a little rainy, but not overly rainy.
I've seen worse.
Yeah, definitely.
There was one a few years ago where it was really bad.
Yeah, I remember that. It was like...
never got above 60 or something.
It was cloudy, and it was like 70.
Yeah, about 10 years ago. Gary Meyer on the Streamliner on the dot. On Tuesday, Dan Fedora will be back with a friend from Verizon to give away a phone, some FM transmitters, that will make it easy for your smartphone to pick up the show through your car speakers on an FM signal, and some of those fly grips that Dan talked about the last time he was here. It attaches to the back of your phone and makes your phone easier to hold. And they're GearForce branded, according to the note he gave me. See what that looks like. I don't have a logo for the GearForce yet, but thank you.
Maybe you will.
Dan, for doing that. And I was talking a few minutes ago about posting things that come back to haunt you, and you would think that anybody with a respectable job would be aware that that's going to slap you in the face if you get way over your skis.
However.
And I read those posts by that teacher in New Jersey, and then when confronted, she said, well, I didn't think anybody would take it seriously, where you're telling on your tweets you want to stab the students. Here we are, 6 o'clock. Spartans coming up. Adjust your volume.
Spartans! What is your profession?
And now a Florida mother is outraged after her 4-year-old son was expelled from his preschool because of a Facebook post on her personal page. Ashley Habat said she doesn't regret expressing her opinion, but doesn't believe her son should be punished for something she wrote. Her son was running late for picture day. When they arrived, she told the administrator that she thought the school didn't give parents enough notice for picture day. The administration says they gave a week's notice for everybody. She took to Facebook to vent her frustrations and never expected the school to see her private post.
It's not private.
No.
That's what Facebook is.
Here it is. Why is it that every single day there is something new I dislike about Will's school? Are my standards really too high? Or are people working in the education field really just that ignorant?
Nice.
She says she tagged the school in the post, but didn't expect to receive a call to the office the next day. When she dropped her son off the next day, the school told her that her son could no longer attend.
Wow. Good.
They just felt like we weren't the right fit. So that is the end of the 4-year-old's education there.
And I hope it was one of those schools that she had to, you know, try to get in because it was the cool school to be in and all that stuff, and now she got the kid kicked out.
So she's late for picture day, and they were notified a week in advance.
And she's mad at them.
Right. And they did something wrong. And then you can't just kind of let it shine on or schedule the whole situation. You've got to go to Facebook and call these people ignorant. That's going to get you far.
I mean, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? Why is that your first go-to thing?
Because as
what
that
is going on?
Professor of psychobabble or whatever he's the professor of said in the other story.
Yeah.
It's just an extension of your life where it's not meant to be anything but your thoughts going out.
But it is. Then you know what? Write it in your diary or scream it in your bedroom by yourself if you have something to say.
They have to go and publish all this stuff. I want to get that. I threw that story out already because I'm trying to cut down on the paper. I want to quote that psycho.
Yeah, that guy that was giving
it. I've never heard that title before.
A cyber something, right?
Yeah. Let's see here. Here it is. He is a cyber psychologist. A specialist in that field.
Oh, sure.
When people go online, it doesn't feel like the real world. It's almost an extension of their imagination, where they can say almost anything they want.
Stop giving people...
It's a drama. It sounds like the insert in the Moody Blues song, Nights in White Satin.
Breathe deep.
It's a drama in your head that plays out online, and people lose the sense of perspective that there are actually real people listening to this and watching what I am saying.
Senior citizens wish they were young. What is real and what is an illusion? But you know that this guy is just justifying.
Yeah, if you
wrong behavior
have two brain cells working, you've seen examples of people posting stuff and it comes back to haunt them.
And especially, you know what? Okay, I'll give you the fact that this is a new and uncharted territory. But okay, it's not anymore. We know the implications, so let's start to change the behavior about how you use the social media, because it does have implications,
yes.
And it isn't in your head.
Yes.
So tired of people.
You've been warned.
People just getting all, like, this guy's giving these people you can't blame her.
It's just an illusion.
Breathe deep.
Let's play the opening. Have you gotten a hold of Jim Ramsey? Is he a go or no go? Haven't heard from him? Okay.
I don't believe you're seriously considering listening.
Testing now.
Go.
It's Friday, you bastard.
A man who is known far and wide for his after-dinner talk.
Take that.
It's the 6 o'clock hour.
Good evening, The Hague and Bedford Park. Breaking news. Those wacky Japanese are doing it again. Yesterday, the woman who created Hello Kitty said it's not a kitty. Guys are marrying 6-foot-tall pillows.
That makes sense.
And now this, Shukatsu Festa, in which people prepare for their death by choosing their funeral outfit, have funeral makeup put on, and slip into a coffin they like and have a picture taken.
I don't know what that means. I didn't understand any of that.
So they know what they're going to look like on the day of their funeral.
Uh-huh.
What's it going to take to put you in this coffin? A heart attack? Hey, you never get over that new coffin smell, do you?
Well, let's move on. Let's groove on.
Developing story. A Florida mother hung up on a cop who was inquiring about her missing child because she had to get on stage at a strip club.
The bitch must die.
Shake what your mama gave you.
Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle.
Hey, your daughter's missing.
I don't care. Wiggle, wiggle. I have to go spread eagle for some conventioneers who are dying to stuff my thong with dirty singles. There should be more paperwork to being a parent.
Shake that.
I'm Gary Meyer. Those stories and more on 240 Minutes. Hello to Craig, the alcoholic, listening in central Illinois on his porch.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
This is the Super G Gear Force on WGN.FM, Chicago.
Oh, sometimes I get a good feeling, yeah.
That might be a nice name for a strip club, Dirty Singles.
Perfect.
What else is it?
I mean, that works
that
on a lot of levels.
To a lot of the, personnel and what they stuff in the G-string.
Oh, my gosh. That's
Dirty Singles.
Instead of Diamond and all these other...
Oh, I got to find that story because I want to share the name of the club that this woman is stripping in.
Ecstasy and all that.
While her daughter went missing. Oh, great. I got so much paper here now.
30 singles is really cool.
Hey, Aaron, can you reprint that stripper story? I might not have it ready to grab here. Or ready to grab. There's another.
Ready to grab is a good name.
Because I want to mention the name of the club.
Is it a funny
it has that. Yeah.
Does it have that?
It's right. I saw it, but then that doesn't mean anything. All right, you look for it, Aaron, okay? Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Something besides a football was flying above the field during the Panthers-Chiefs game. A camera-toting drone flew into Bank of America Stadium during Thursday's exhibition game. This was a week ago. Its operator was detained, and after questioning, the unidentified man was released. Think about that, though. These drones, they're just going to start popping up everywhere because you can buy them off the shelf.
This is going to start a whole new...
Yeah.
Nuisance and problem and legal and privacy and
maybe the NFL will start using them because they have that camera on a wire,
which is really
that
weird.
Swings around and doesn't that interfere with play at all?
I don't. Well, obviously it doesn't, but it does look strange when you see that cord.
I mean, I don't care what it looks like. I'm not watching football for the aesthetics.
Well, I'm sure it doesn't. It can't. How could they do it, then?
I don't know. It goes over the field, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's not just sideline.
No. It's like in the middle.
Is it so high that there's no way?
It's got to be.
So high. So high.
Although, I wonder, like, for one thing, a pass is one thing, but a punt goes pretty high.
That's what I'm saying. Get rid of that and have a drone just hover over the whole deal.
Those drones are going to become...
They already are.
I know, but it's going to be even more.
But this guy said he didn't know. Excuse me.
Oh,
I have a throat.
He didn't know
that it would be something that they'd be concerned with.
Oh, so he just flew it into a major game. But I didn't know that would be a problem. Oh, unidentified flying object hovering over a field. What's the big deal? I had no idea.
I think he said that. I think I saw that.
That's nice.
I don't know if he made a statement, but apparently, if in fact he did get questioned, that would be his fallback.
Yeah, what does the cyber psychologist say about that?
It's just an extension of everyday life.
He's trying to become a part of the game and doesn't want to be just a spectator, but an active member.
The NFL spokesman said he was not aware of drones invading any other NFL venue. We're closely monitoring this issue with our clubs. Brandon Parks was in section 105 when he noticed the object with flashing green and red lights with about 6 minutes left in the game. It had all of our section's attention and the cops. Then a helicopter came and flashed a light on it, and then the drone vanished downward behind the Wells Fargo building. And that was all we saw of it.
It sounds like a UFO.
Yeah.
It sounds like a UFO sighting. I mean, and then it darted away very quickly. We never saw it again.
How about instead of that, what looks even worse, and if you're talking about aesthetics, the camera on the wire doesn't bother me. You know what always bothers me is the net that goes up for the field goals.
Well, of course.
And the PAT.
But see, I think that...
There is where you can take those down and have a drone behind there, and the drone can catch the ball
and
bring it back to the sideline.
And fly it back.
Yeah. Because you're so worried about your buying in bulk 50-cent freaking football that you can't let a fan have, and you're a multi-billion-dollar... Non-profit industry.
There you go. They are non-profit.
Every year I bring this up, and then, it's a safety issue where a fan might jump and get the ball. Bull. That ball is something they don't want to pay for.
And now they want a piece of Coldplay's touring.
Exactly. Or Katy Perry. Or who was the
Rihanna.
Third act? Rihanna.
Yeah.
That is so embarrassing. And, again... The parallel is baseball. Dozens of balls go into the crowd every game, and those things, if they're talking about safety, those things are coming at you hard.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't see them going in to retrieve the balls.
Why don't they take a cue from soccer and just build a net into the goalposts? Because they don't have that problem in soccer. It's already caught. The balls never go into the stands.
Oh, I see. You say instead of just the post, it's
just
got a net.
Just build it back, and it's got a net. And
why
that
not?
Way.
Right.
Yeah.
And that
I guess then they have to have somebody go up and get it because it'd be down on the bottom of the net.
I guess it'd be just hanging in there.
Right.
They have about six of them.
Well, no, just have a long pole and just
right.
poke it up. That wouldn't look any worse than
this
crappy
big,
old
giant
net. These guys hoisting it like it's Iwo Jima.
Yeah, those same guys that hoist the net, they could have the big stick. So you're just keeping people employed.
Yeah, there you go.
Here's a text. I can't hear you, so you'll have to fill in the blank way to relate to your listeners. Everybody's picking up on that now.
So
it's
good.
Not just the person who started it.
That is so good. And that started as a legitimate, probably like an angry.
That started after vacation.
Yeah, a legitimate, but like an angry
way to relate.
Text. Yeah.
I haven't worked for 7 years.
I haven't had a vacation for 7 years.
Right. Yeah. Way to relate to your audience. And now it's every day.
Well, the fact we're doing this at all so you can go jet setting off to your vacation.
So you moved your work day so you could leave on vacation. Way to relate
to
your
audience.
Oh. So those of us who make those nets they pull up, way to relate.
Yeah. That's how I put bread on my table.
Exactly.
Way to relate.
I'm a net tender, damn it. I come from a long line of net
my
tenders.
My dad was a net tender. My grandfather was a net tender. His father was a net tender.
Because that ball would go pretty much in the crowd where you don't have to leap for it. And who's going to jump in that section right below that goes down underneath the stadium? Unless they had that one guy.
That one guy that caught the ball.
It was that soldier, right?
It was a Bear game, yeah.
And he landed on his feet, not like that U.S. Well, that U.S. seed guy did too.
But I think they're afraid that people might fight.
Okay, do they fight at baseball games?
It's hard to fight
there
over
is a
football
once in a while, but
well,
let them fight.
Well,
that's all. It's football.
It's America.
But this goes to what you were saying is that, like you were saying about, like say Harper Lee, you know, they made a football going into the crowd a weird thing. So everybody fights for one because it doesn't happen very often. But if they kick the ball into the crowd regularly, people wouldn't fight for them like they don't with the baseball. Because now it's in there. It's normal. I understand the ball's coming.
The NFL
someone's going to get it.
Has a history of trying to cheap up on everything. Anything you look at that they've been involved in, it goes to, we don't want to pay.
Yeah.
Whether it's the injured, the concussed players over the years or whatever.
Well, it's in their DNA way back from Papa Bear.
And Bibble mentioned Harper Lee because she apparently at football games would leap for footballs.
She loved to jump for footballs. She never wrote another book.
That and a woman's coming in to talk about her book about Harper Lee in about 15 minutes.
Well, you were saying if you make something exclusive, then it becomes
more attractive.
More
you
attractive.
Want to go towards it.
And so that was what
of
I was
away
saying,
from it.
Is that if the ball always then got kicked into the crowd, we wouldn't think it was that big of a deal, and whoever caught it, like they do in baseball. Someone catches it, they wave.
And didn't some caller say, oh, the pressure of the ball has been
well, they said that
regulated for the game, and it's just the perfect whatever. There's some BS.
Well, they said there's a different ball to kick than there is than the one that
right.
they
have a
with.
Bunch of balls on the sideline.
Think how many balls they could have
in the course
football.
Of any game. Yeah,
it's a billion-dollar industry.
Yeah. And here these guys are sitting on those benches that either pump hot air out during the winter or cold air during the summer, and a piece of plywood that they sit on. That whole sideline thing is pretty bush too.
Well, the whole thing, well, even think about the whole, some of those seats are benches too, even at the football game.
Yeah.
People sit on benches. Yeah. They don't even sit in chairs.
And the Gatorade is on a table like it's at a picnic. It really is pretty funky.
Well, it is still, I mean, in many ways, it is still very much like high school. The pros even have that same kind of, you know, it's a lot nicer, but there is that kind of high schoolish thing where there's a bench, there's everybody's standing, they have the bad little chains.
Well, I noticed,
they'll have cheerleaders.
I noticed last night during the Bears game talking about going electronic instead of having the plays printed out and brought down to the quarterback or whomever they're looking
right.
at. It was on a tablet. It was on an electronic tablet.
Instead of the Polaroids. Yep. Oh, wow, I never thought of that.
It was Polaroids, and then it went to they make a copy.
Yeah.
And now it was on the tablet last
Perfect.
Night. Yeah.
Wow.
So they got that
cool.
going, but they still have to crank that net up to get their funky ball that when they buy in bulk probably cost them all of 50 cents.
Oh, I mean, come on. You know,
so
darn
if they
well,
did start letting the fans catch, would they show up with two gloves? So as net. Opposed to the people who show up at Wrigley with a mitt, they would have those
two.
Cool gripper gloves
yeah,
so they could.
Right, like football players
yeah.
wear.
I think they have,
stick
big,
them.
They have a big net. Just trying to catch it when those giant nets.
But what, as I'm following the lead of that thread on the text, way to treat your fans.
Right.
Yeah, like animals. How to relate to your fans. Treat them like a bunch of animals.
It's true, though.
Leslie, what do you have?
Hey!
The name of that strip club where the woman was getting ready to go on stage to strip and the police called her. She hung up on them to say her daughter was missing. And she just said, I got to go on stage, and hung up at the Jiggle Joint.
Oh.
That's not the name of the place.
Oh.
that's the way the story's
too.
Written. Yeah.
That's a good one, too.
Florida stripper hung up on a cop who called to help find the woman's missing young daughter because the stripper had to get up on stage at the Jiggle Joint. Bobby Joe Butcher was too busy working to find the 10-year-old. And the place that she works at is Calendar Girls.
Nice.
That thing, Jiggle Joint, is even better.
I love Jiggle Joint.
The girl was last seen Wednesday when Butcher dropped her off at a barbecue on her way to work. The child was meant to come home after the dinner, but hadn't been seen for 4 hours, the girl's grandmother told police. They called Butcher on her cell phone. When the mom said she was the last person to see her daughter, she was apparently too busy to offer more help. I have to get on stage.
Dow. So, do we know where the kid is?
Let's see. I think the girl was... Oh, here it is. The girl's found shortly. But they arrested Butcher for obstructing the investigation. How do you go up there and do your thing? I mean, I know this woman is a professional.
Yeah, I mean, she can you know, separate her personal life from her professional. That's part of what it is to be an entertainer.
The police call, your daughter's missing, and you get on stage, and you're working the pole. These guys are,
woo!
I can't even do the, woo!
Woo! Yeah, all of a sudden, you know, they call up. She's on her cell phone in the back getting ready, making sure her G-string is okay.
Right.
And then all of a sudden she hears this. Look, I got to go.
That's my song.
I got to go. That's my cue.
You're shoving your keister into their faces, and your 10-year-old daughter's missing?
I can't hear you.
That's what
I'm
she said.
I'm ready to go on.
Oh, wait. She said, when asked about the disconnection, the woman claimed she'd answered a call on the other line and lost the officer.
My music is on. Yeah, that's my mom right there.
And guys... usually just put a dollar bill in there.
Well, it depends. Some guys get a little enamored.
A little inebriated.
Well, I'm just
maybe,
saying.
Maybe, but then isn't it mostly dollar bills?
Oh, it's still dollar bills, but I mean, you can sit there and put 20 separate dollar bills in there. And then sometimes what I've seen, at least on the movies that I've seen this on,
yeah.
They just take a whole stack and they just throw, mm-hmm. just throw it on the...
That is, I know it's degrading on a lot of levels, but when they're crawling around picking up those bills.
I know.
Oh.
And they just throw it right on the stage.
Yeah.
It's just, and it's almost, I think the guys do that as almost more of a degrading thing to make them walk around on their knees and pick up their money as opposed to putting it in there. I don't know which is worse.
It's a tie.
Putting it in your G-string or making you grovel on the floor for it.
I remember I was at the Baton, which is the female impersonator place, and I was goaded to go up and put some dollar bills in the outfit of the one person, and then you get up there and you realize, wait a minute, this is a guy.
What am I doing?
And I'm in the bathroom, and they're all in there, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, oh, they are guys, yes. I don't know where they put their landing gear, because it's smooth. They have some way where they can get rid of it.
They're like a Ken doll.
They are.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking you can only do so much to hide the lines.
Maybe they buy like jock straps that are like four sizes too small.
They must do something and duct tape it up. I don't
cram
know.
Cram it in there.
But again, when I kissed Chili Pepper, and had that moment where, wait a minute, that's a guy, right? But he was a woman all the time.
Right, but still.
Because I saw her off stage in a restaurant.
Right, but it's a guy that dresses. It's not. She didn't have the equipment taken off.
No, she was just a female impersonator. So, but that's my point. So when I kissed her, I pulled back and went, wait a minute, I just kissed a guy.
Yes, you did. And you liked it.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a guy. Whether she dresses,
but man, some of these guys, they look, dare I say, hot.
It's too bad that we're ending just about a half hour or an hour too late, because maybe today you could have gotten home early and seen one of the Maury Povich shows where they have the transvestites on the stage, and then the audience has to vote: is it a guy or a woman?
One of his favorite shows.
One of his
outside
three different...
of looking for the father of
you are the
child.
Father. You are not the father.
Do the DNA testing.
And I'll tell you, when you watch that Maury thing, when they do that, especially that show's taped in New York, so you know there's some high-level transvestites in New York.
Sure.
I mean, you really, there's some that you can't tell. You're like, wow.
That's what I'm saying. When I was there, you're looking and you're thinking, you got to catch yourself. That's a guy.
La 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 la.
Yeah. 85-year-old grandfather in Ohio arrested. He's charged with trying to smuggle pot into a correction institution while on a visit to his grandson. How about that, Norman Rockwell?
Jeez.
You're 85. You're going to go visit your grandson who's in prison, and you're trying to get him some pot. That's bad grandpa right there.
But is he good grandpa? You know? I mean, I don't know. Where's the line? I mean, smuggling the pot, wrong. Grandpa trying to do something good for his grandson, good.
Okay. Right. So, the pot image has shifted over the years.
Well, I don't even think it's shifted. I'm just saying is that, you know, the son.
And
probably,
grandpa's image, too.
The grandson, yeah. You know what? I got news for you. The grandfather... probably about 54. So it's not like some old dithering guy with a cardigan on.
No, you didn't listen.
Oh, I didn't listen.
85.
Oh,
he's 85.
Oh.
Yeah, he's not 54.
Oh, okay, then I can't.
No, 85-year-old man. That's what makes the story even crazier.
Yeah, can't justify that, though. That one, that's not good. He should know right from wrong.
Yeah, right. He's lived long enough to know.
The grandfather raised a very good parent who allowed his grandson to go to jail. So.
Right. That's how the chain goes.
So you never know.
Hey, Aaron, I don't know where the author of this book, who I'm going to talk to, is. She's going to be in studio. Do you know where she's supposed to show up?
She should be downstairs any minute. I just checked. She's not here yet.
Okay. She might still have her key card. She used to work for the Tribune.
Or she might just be dodging the press because she's...
Now, that storm has calmed down.
Yeah.
Yeah, former reporter
and
feature writer for the Chicago Tribune.
I remember seeing her byline.
Where she was a member of the staff that won a Pulitzer Prize for a 2001 series about O'Hare Airport entitled Gateway to Gridlock.
I wonder if she gets a Pulitzer herself, if she was a part of a team. I
don't know. There's
a
question right there.
Yeah, that's... Because you always wonder now, like at the Emmys, the writing team,
right? Best
or like
written sitcom,
the Colbert,
50 people go up there.
So now, do they all get one, or does like the whole team get one?
If it's like the bogus Emmys that I attended, where I lost, here, I was told this is why it's kind of like Amway. You get one. One person gets one, and you have to buy. If you want one, you have to buy it.
Oh.
So they probably look at these categories and think, who has the most people involved? Because we'll sell more trophies.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they make a nice buck. Because some of those have 25 writers.
Takes 20 minutes for all of them to get up on stage.
Wow. Oh, man. Because I always wonder now, is that just going to sit in the office on a centrally located desk? Or do we all get to take one home? You know, the Emmy.
No, they're not going to give... free ones. You know there's a free one, and then you buy if you want it.
And
trophy.
I heard they're like $400.
Are they?
They're not cheap. The one from the
Although, now, you won one, right?
Yeah.
And that is the same kind that they got the other night, right?
Looks like it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just because it's a local Emmy, it's not any different.
Same design, cool. All that, yeah.
So it's that big with the thing, with the little ball and the
little ball,
the little figure holding
it. Figure, my name on the front of it.
That's cool. Yeah. When I worked for Zenith, they had won an Emmy because they, you know, helped develop HDTV, and they had it in a big case. And that was a pretty big trophy. You don't have that out?
Well, if out, you mean...
Like in your
it's
house?
It's on a shelf that it's not highly trafficked.
I never saw it.
It's in a little cubby hole with... I have some other awards, and they're all shoved in there. And I don't really...
Yeah, but that one is... That's kind of a... That's a prestigious award.
Sure.
I mean, it's, you know, other little things, maybe. You know, but that one's...
That's... You know how I criticize people when they get up and do bad speeches?
Yeah.
And I did that the other day after the Emmys.
Right.
When we won our Emmy, this guy pointed it out. I copped to it because I said it on the air. When I got up there, I did that whole thing where my father's in the hospital.
Oh, no.
I know.
You did every cliche.
I did. And after I did it, I went, that's the kind of stuff I make fun of.
You didn't say, I didn't think we'd win, did you?
Yeah, because I didn't wear a tuxedo. I had a suit on.
Oh, so
I said, I'm wearing a suit because I didn't think we'd win this.
Oh,
I did all the cliches.
Every bad thing.
But I pointed out to this listener, that was only local.
Right.
So I didn't embarrass myself nationally.
But so you did, I didn't think we'd win.
Right.
I want to thank my parents.
Gwyneth Paltrow, where there's some family member that is sick.
Right. I want to thank my parents and somebody's sick.
I don't remember the rest of it, but...
Oh, is it funny?
I hit some cliches.
So now what happened? So now, because you and, was it given to you and Steve?
We each got one.
Oh, you each got
one. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's in the day when they probably gave the free ones. I'm not sure 100% if they give every writer that's on a show, if they win a free one. I can't imagine they do.
Because, like, when you won that as what? As the producer or
the hosts?
The hosts, the performers?
Marjorie, you're in the middle microphone situation there.
Thank you. I am so sorry. I'm late.
Elevator. Are you late?
Well, I think I might be.
A couple minutes.
Elevators were out in my building.
That's all right.
Here now.
She's blaming technology. Were out.
You have to. Yeah, you get settled in there and we'll start.
All right.
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
I didn't know if you still had your key card from when you worked at the Tribune. You could just walk right through security.
That's been repossessed.
Yes. And that... Well, first of all, on the day that you're out of here, they demagnetize it or something, or they take your number out of the system. The other week, mine, I thought I lost, and then I found it, but I'd already ordered another one, but I thought I could use the other one, and they take that old one out.
Yeah.
You're out of here. You're done. Marja, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, used to write for the Tribune, and it said on the jacket of your book that you were a member of the staff that won a Pulitzer for, what am I saying wrong?
What's that?
Aaron's saying in my headphones, I think her name is Maria.
Oh, it's Maria.
Spelled,
you've got it. It's Maria. You've got
I said Marja because it's M-A-R. Is that a J? That's
it
a J, right?
I tell people it rhymes with how are you.
Okay, but it's spelled M-A-R-J-A, right?
It is, just to make it confusing, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not as dumb as I look.
You're closer than most. That's just fine.
Okay. Ms. Mills was part of a group that did a piece on O'Hare's Gateway to Gridlock. It was the title of the piece was Gateway to Gridlock, and it says that you were part of a group, and we were just talking about it. Did you get your own Pulitzer, or how does that work?
Heavens no. That was a staff Pulitzer Prize, and there were a lot of us who worked on that project. It was a lot of fun.
Well, where is the prize? Where does it stay?
I mean, don't you get a keychain or anything?
Actually, they were lovely. They did give us kind of smaller crystal awards, I remember, but there were a lot of us involved.
So the main Pulitzer is in a trophy case of the Tribune?
I think what they have down on the fourth floor, glass case.
That's where that stays, the main one.
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. All right. But you're not here for that. That's something that happened a few years ago. You have written the book, The Mockingbird Next Door. In essence, it's you moving next door to Harper Lee and her sister Alice and hanging with them for a couple years in Alabama. And this book came out this summer, and I was talking earlier about how there's no secret that there was some controversy that Harper made a statement after the book came out saying, I don't know But this woman is saying, I didn't approve anything that she has put in this book, but you have countered with your statement, which is she had a stroke 7 years ago, right?
She had a serious stroke in 2007. She and her older sister, Alice Lee, who she calls Atticus in a skirt, practicing attorney, were just wonderfully generous with their time and their insights with me. And a statement attributed to her first came out in 2011 when the book was acquired by the Penguin Press, disavowing the book, essentially. But her sister, who was still practicing law then...
102. She practiced until she was 100, right?
She Alice Lee will be 103 in next month. But at the time was practicing law. It was sharp and said that statement had gone out without her knowledge and didn't reflect her feelings or those of her sister, and reaffirmed their participation. They were wonderful to me. And one thing I think people maybe don't know about them is what a sense of fun they both have. I think because Nell Harper Lee, Nell Harper as she's known in her hometown, and Alice Lee, because they've been so private over the years, I don't know that people have a sense of just what great fun it was to hang out with them. They both were delightful.
This all started because you went down there to do a piece for the Tribune after the book was named the book of the year in Chicago. What was the... It was the book of the month club or whatever.
Mayor
Daley
Daley
started.
Used to have a book of the... every year, right?
Well, I had actually interviewed Mayor Daley briefly about his reading habits, and he did say that was his favorite book. It was actually selected by the library system. That was back when the library system here first began this One Book, One Chicago program that's still going, where the idea is to get people from all different walks of life reading and discussing the same book. And that was their first ever selection. And so my editor here I say in this building at the Tribune, sent me to Monroeville really thinking that we would write about the town, give readers here some sense of this place that had created Nell Harper Lee and that beautiful novel. And so it was a surprise to me when I had the opportunity to meet both of those sisters, get to know them. And then it was about 3 years after I had met them and they had helped me with my newspaper profile that I ended up moving right next door to them.
How did that process begin? Did they say, hey, you should come down and live next door to us for a while? Or did you just pick up on, hey, I want to live next door to these people? And how did the house next door just miraculously open up when you wanted to move down there?
Yeah, that was as surprising to me as to anybody, I think, and ended up, I think, reflecting something about Nell, which is these are women who, remembered the Depression and were horrified when a friend of theirs had suggested that I look at a house two doors down from theirs in this small town. We had all talked about the idea of me coming down, and they were so encouraging. And the only problem they saw was that the rent that the person two doors down in the house that a friend of theirs suggested I look at, and which I did so with their encouragement, she was going to charge $650 a month for this three-bedroom house, which to a Chicago girl sounded pretty good. But Nell's two-word response when I told her about that was, highway robbery. She wasn't pleased that I might pay a little bit more than she thought I should. And so the house right next door to theirs was for sale at that time. It wasn't for rent, but they offered to be references for me to inquire if the person might rent it to me at least on a month-to-month basis while it was for sale. And so that's what happened. And I think that proximity was really one of the gifts of that whole experience. It just, we all know the kind of how easy it is with a neighbor to just say, hey, want to grab some coffee? And that was something that happened quite often.
And that intention was to move down there and write this book? That was the whole plan, right? I mean, there was no, well, I just want to hang out with you girls because you're fascinating. There was a book that was going to be written.
Yes, they were wonderful about that. And, they had been so private over the years. And there were some things already when they were helping me with my newspaper profile that where they were ready to share their thoughts on some things that they had been private about all those years. And so we talked about some of the myths and rumors that they wanted to set the record straight about. But also it was a chance to know them. They encouraged friends and family to talk to me. It was a chance to know them in context, which, for a journalist is such a gift. We don't normally have that chance. I ended up spending a lot of time socially with their friends and family and getting a sense of their life in that small town then, but also growing up. You know, I think the character of Scout in To Kill a Mockingbird is such a vivid character and a favorite character.
Yeah, where can I get that ham costume? Because Halloween's coming. I want to go as a big ham. I love that costume. Now, let's set some background here. To Kill a Mockingbird came out in 1960 and obviously became a brilliant piece of literature, applauded. A movie comes out, that's awarded, and that's all she did. And that was it, one and out. And this book is selling, what, 750,000 copies a year still?
It's been just remarkably enduring. It's still, I think, required reading in 70% was the last figure I saw of American high schools. It's been translated into dozens of languages. It's just, I can think of very few books that have had that kind of a hold for that long. And, you know, I think they were so appreciative of what it has meant to people all this time. But also, as Noah Harper said to me early on, referring to the knocks that would still come on the door and some of the demands that were still being made, at this time, she said, 40 years of this gets to be a bit much. They had really been dealing with that press of interest ever since it first came out.
Why no follow-up? What, one and done, that's pretty unusual in that if you write something that's this brilliant, you don't have anything else in you. And I wanted to know who the other authors were over the years that did a one-and-done masterpiece. And I looked at the list, and I saw J.D. Salinger, but J.D. Salinger wrote other things. It's just that he became a recluse, and then that became the thing. Well, we want to find out more about this guy. But do you know how many people have done one piece? That's it. I don't have any more in me, and I'm just going to call it a day?
I don't know. I'd be interested to know.
Yeah, like I said, there are about 10 listed in this piece I saw. But I think most of them had written other things, not that they became anything big like their original piece that became the successful piece. But with J.D. Salinger, it was the same deal. Once they decided we're done, then people went, well, we want to know more about you. Because if you write Catcher in the Rye or To Kill a Mockingbird, there's something going on there we want to find out about.
Why? Well, and there still is remarkably, you know, the interest you see in the tourism in that town. It's that town is, as Nell Harper herself would say, 100 miles from anywhere. It's not easy to get there. And yet there's this steady stream of tourism that will come. People like to poke around the old courthouse where her father had a law office across the street, and that people recognize from that movie starring Gregory Peck. They replicated that in Hollywood for the movie. And you'll see people with a little self-guided tour brochure in their hands poking around looking for some glimpse of the make-em of the 1930s.
Did she say why she didn't write anything else?
Well, I felt that there was a glimpse at part of what she's dealt with when we were having breakfast at a hole-in-the-wall diner, which was her kind of place. And we were having our eggs one morning, and someone recognized her. This was, you know, in that area. And came up to her and just had a short exchange, told her how much the book had meant to her. Nell was gracious. And the woman walked away after a few minutes. And I remember thinking as she walked away, that's a story this woman, an encounter this woman will treasure for years and a story she'll tell people. She was clearly delighted. But Nell turned to me as I was thinking that and said, I hope I didn't disappoint her. And I thought, that is a glimpse, I think, at the weight of expectations somebody in her very unusual position dealt with. She also said to a friend of theirs, a Methodist minister, in that area, Tom Butts, do you ever wonder why I didn't write a second book? And Tom, in his kind of characteristic dry wit, said, well, yeah, me and a million other people, something to that effect. And she said to him at that time, well, two things. One, I said what I have to say. And two, I wouldn't go through all that publicity again for all the money in the world. One of the things that was striking to me as I got to know her, and we talked about this over time, was that I don't think this was a decision that was made, as many people imagine, very early on, and then never revisited. I think it was something that was revisited over time, but of course she didn't publish anything after To Kill a Mockingbird. She did some work, I believe in the 1980s, in what might have been a nonfiction narrative she was considering about a minister in that area, and did spend quite a bit of time, I think, researching it. She had gone with Truman Capote, as a lot of people know, right before To Kill a Mockingbird was published. He invited her to go to Kansas with him to write what became a very well-known book in its own right, In Cold Blood. And when I was living in Monroeville, not one movie but two about that experience of Truman Capote going to Kansas accompanied by his childhood playmate and still adult friend, Harper Lee, and had the really unusual experience of watching one of those movies with her. And it was just a glimpse also at how odd it is to know that people are imagining what your life has been all those years. She was watching the filmmakers, I think, educated guess mm-hmm. as to what the dialogue might have been, for example, between her and Truman.
Speaking of Truman Capote, I'm sure you've heard the scuttlebutt that he helped her write the book or maybe had written the whole book for her. Have you heard this?
Oh, that was one of the things that both of them had pretty strong opinion about and wanted to express. And I remember Alice Lee saying, biggest lie ever told. And I think there's just no reason at all to imagine that was the case. I do think that she was terribly helpful to him when it came to In Cold Blood. They were interviewing families in a rural part of Kansas, and he was such an outsized character that I think people didn't know what to make of him. And certainly I saw when I knew her all those years later, this gift she had for putting people at ease around a kitchen table and being so genuinely interested in their lives. And I think she was hugely helpful to him as he researched In Cold Blood.
And did she make a good bit of money on this book? Or what I read was she was suing her agent, I believe, because there were some questions about where the money has gone over the years.
Well, the In Cold Blood, you're referring back to To Kill a Mockingbird,
yes,
as opposed to
yes.
his. There have been difficulties in recent years. One of the things that surprised me, and I think would surprise a lot of people about life as they lived it all those years in Monroeville, was how simply they lived. They shared in Monroeville this modest red brick, just one-story ranch house. I don't think the decor had changed much at all since the 1950s. When Alice Lee and their father first moved there, they dressed simply. Just the world of things, material world, I think was of very little consequence to them. They were not focused on that side of things in terms of their day-to-day life. I know she would occasionally get clothing at the Vanity Fair outlet mall in that town or at Walmart. And as I say, her preference was for hole-in-the-wall diners. I did ask her when we were having a not-great meal one evening at a local restaurant, where do you go around here for a good steak? This was early on, and typical Nell Harper, without missing a beat, she just looked me in the eyes and said, New York.
Yeah.
That was, we all know older people where one of the great pleasures in life and ways of socializing is going out to eat, and that was a lament that they and their circle of friends had. They did have a few favorite places they would go, but this is a town now of 7,000 people that really is quite far from the nearest cities, and so it was a different way of life, to be sure, than what she lived in New York, where she did also, she had an apartment in New York. She had moved there as a young woman and was working on To Kill a Mockingbird there. And I think it's interesting that she felt the pull she did to two such different places. She also loved in New York to walk those streets. And there, I think, could go to museums and ball games. She was a rabid Mets fan. She could mostly go unrecognized, I believe, and liked that.
And her sister Alice and Harper lived together all the way until Harper went into this nursing home in the last few years, right?
Correct. Nell Harper Lee would divide her time between New York, and she lived in New York and then would spend long stretches in Monroeville
with Alice. And they never married, either of them.
Neither married nor had children. They had two siblings, both of whom did marry and have children.
They were like the female Wright brothers. Two guys, two brothers, never married, it happens.
Was she scout grown up?
Well,
Did you get a sense of that?
Was so interesting to hear Alice, who at 15 years older had such vivid memories of her sister as a young girl, and others that knew her then talk about what a tomboy she was in this kind of spirit of adventure. There's a line in To Kill a Mockingbird where Nell had referred to the spark of fresh adventure in someone's eyes, and I think she was that way. I remember Alice saying she got a bicycle for her 10th birthday, and Alice saying she rode off and we didn't see much of her for a while after that. I think she very much was someone who was climbing trees and exploring that world.
So obviously she wanted to be left alone, and then you move right next door for a couple of years. Was that kind of invasive, don't you think?
Well,
in her grill, sort of?
Oh, my goodness. You know, I certainly had no interest in doing that if that wasn't something that not only was okay with them, but was something that they wanted. And when it came to where to live then, after we had already talked about me moving there, I did say to them when that house two doors down was first recommended to me, I'm not even going to look at this place. I said to them, it seems to me this might be pretty close for comfort. I'm not even going to look at it if it would be. There's other places that I could be. But they encouraged me to, and then encouraged me to go ahead and rent the house right next door. One of my favorite things to hear when I would pick up the phone would be Nell's kind of husky voice saying, "Hi, hon, you pouring?" And that just meant, "You've got a pot of coffee going. How about if I come over and we'll have a cup of coffee together?"
There 2 years.
I rented that house for 18 months, and of course had known them about 3 years by the time I actually moved to Monroeville, and then continued to see them on return visits after, and not only them, but this circle of friends and family who embraced this Yankee far more than I could have hoped.
In the 18 months, how many times would you get together? Was it every day?
Well, not every day, but
Were you pouring just every other day?
I don't think there was a set schedule, but it was quite frequent. They had routines that they had had for years and just invited me to join them in them. They were things like feeding the ducks and geese at the local lake, and they were such students of how the ducks and geese interacted. You know, I think even in the animal world, they were interested in sort of social classes and or whatever you would call the equivalent there. We would go out to eat quite often, and I was fortunate. I had a chance to drive Nell Harper to the New York area. I took her as far as New Jersey one time, and you can imagine what an interesting companion she was to have. Wow. In the passenger seat.
Well, you can read all about it in The Mockingbird Next Door, Life with Harper Lee, Marja Mills. Is it somewhere in there? What is the name again?
Marja.
Marja. But it's spelled, again, M-A-R-J-A, so you gotta ask. And the book came out this summer.
I answered anything that starts with M, so that was just
right.
Fine.
Ms. Mills, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
And that is about it for this week. I got a call here that is just out of the blue. Kathy?
Hey, Gary, how you doing?
Good, what's up?
So I was enjoying the podcast from yesterday's show, and I hear that you will be doing the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge at Tinley Park High. I want to know when the game is. I want to come out and support you.
Well, I talked to the principal of Tinley Park High School, my alma mater, yesterday, and we've decided to work something out. I don't know how much ice or hot water I will pour on my body, but actually I had the incident today where the Downy spilled on me.
Right.
Does that count?
That's not the ALS.
That's not the ice.
That's the Downy
and
challenge.
And it wasn't over my head, unfortunately.
Yeah, well.
It was elsewhere. But I'm going to probably do this during a football game. October 17th, I believe, is the date we're looking at right now.
Fabulous. Well, once you confirm that, if you could announce over the air, that would be great.
Once all the details are locked in, I will definitely tell you.
Great. Love the show, and have a great Labor Day weekend.
Thank you, Kathy. You too. All right. You, too, have a great Labor Day weekend. Back on Tuesday after Labor Day, and as I mentioned numerous times, Dan Fedor will have some things to give away with his representative from Verizon, a phone, some of the fly grips for the back of your phone so you can hold your phone easier, and the FM transmitters. That's Tuesday around 4 o'clock. Thanks for listening. I'll see you in church, mosque, or temple you pick back on Tuesday. Good night.